Good morning. We're calling the board of the meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. If we can do a roll call, please.
Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Edward Marley.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andy Reverode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call for no more than 3 minutes. Board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal actions on matter raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are on the agenda. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda. So if anyone is here, you're welcome to come up and talk to the board, as long as it's in an item that's not later in the agenda. If anybody wishes to speak? Okay, seeing none. Item 4, adoption of minutes for the March 27 meeting and executive session. So let's start with the March 27th board meeting. Any discussion or motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the minutes of the March 27th board meeting.
Second.
Motion to second. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Winters, if you note all of, I abstained, I wasn't here, please. The minutes for the executive session, has everybody had an opportunity to
No.
We'll give it 30 seconds. Long.
They're coming around.
Okay, that's all right. Speed reading.
It's nothing to read. It's like a sheet of paper. Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the March 27th Executive Board meeting notes.
Second.
Second for Mr. Gilmer. All in favor of approving the executive session minutes?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Mr. Winters, I'm abstaining again.
Maybe you should have been committed.
Yeah. Okay, we have a couple of hearings on item 5. Those will take place at 9:30. So in the meantime, we'll move to items 6A1. The respondent is Peter Prophet, PE. Do we want to, is there anybody here to speak on this case? I thought I had someone.
Just a possible call-in.
Oh, it's just possible call-in? Okay.
In this case, it's tied to second case as well.
Yes, 6A1 and 6A2, but there's nobody here to speak on those cases?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we consent 1 and 2, 6A 1 and 2.
Second.
All in favor of consenting cases 6A 1 and 6A 2?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that we dismiss the consented cases.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion for dismissal of cases 6A 1 and 6A 2. Yeah, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Okay. Cases are dismissed. Thank you, Mr. Hunt.
Who seconded, John?
I seconded.
Andy?
Okay.
Okay.
6A1 and 6A2 have been consented.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we consent 6A3, P17-065.
I'll second.
So wait, consent or dismiss?
Dismiss.
Okay, so we're going to move this case 6A3. This is Jay Schoenman. non-registrant with Interplan LLC, and it's about the use of the term architect on professional documents without registration. So, do I have a motion or discussion?
So, again, same situation. If you need to have questions, you can call the individual respondent and respond to the firm, I believe. So,
Does anybody wishes to discuss? I have one item that I want to discuss on the case. I'm not opposed to dismissal. So, but I do want to discuss the firm Interplan because I don't believe they're registered. They are?
Yeah, they submitted. There was documentation in the packet that showed their firm registration.
Yeah. And they were registered at the time?
Yes.
Okay. It doesn't show up on the listing online. Just saying.
I tried that. I wouldn't trust the listing.
Yeah. I understand that.
So your motion is to dismiss.
All
right. Yeah. So I believe Mr. Jones has a motion to dismiss then.
Okay.
And I'll second it.
And we have a second to dismiss the case. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. We'll move to case, I believe there's somebody here. I hope I'm right. 6B1. This is the case concerning Robert Bauer, certified home inspector. Is anybody here? Yes, if you're welcome to come up. On September 5th, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to inspect and report on the condition of a bedroom door and the back patio roof during a home inspection in Glendale on May of 2017. So that's the case before us. We have the details of the investigation. The EAC recommendations and conclusions. And the staff recommendation is a letter of reprimand, state suspension and probation, peer review, remedial training, restitution for $250, administrative penalty of $1,000, and cost of investigation for $537. So let's hear in this case, if you could please state your name for the record.
It's Robert F. Bauer of Peace of Mind Home Inspection, LLC.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Thank you, Mr. Laura. Ms. Laura.
Orton Laura of Borgstaff.
Thank you. Mr. Bauer, is there anything you'd like to bring up to the board?
Well, this is my third meeting. The first meeting, we obviously went over the findings of the two inspectors. There was a 38 points, I believe, that were a computer issue. I fixed those. My second meeting, I met with Doug, and there was an issue regarding restitution. Mr. David, apparently we didn't act fast enough because he filed the claim or the complaint with, and found my insurance information, at which time he filed a complaint or a claim. And he was denied through my insurance. BTR had yet to respond because we're still going through this. He served me with papers for small claims court in which the presiding judge ruled in my favor that. So for me to be asked to continue to pay, I had offered Mr. David initially, because that's in my contract, to be reimbursed for the cost of his inspection. I submitted those emails. He refused and wanted to barter, but at that time he had already submitted the complaint. So this was going to happen anyways. So. As a result of the ruling through small claims court, I find it like double jeopardy in order to pay him.
Understood. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Bauer or discussion on the case?
Mr. Chair, so the small claims judge cited in your favor that you did not have to pay restitution.
Correct.
So on the basis of?
Would you? The findings of the report, which he had a copy of the report. He looked at the pictures that I provided of both the door and the patio and ruled in my favor. I guess it boils down to what he initially asked for was $5,000. When I told him what was in the contract, and I knew once he submitted the complaint and the claim, I knew I had to go through this in order to be vilified. Like I say, this is the second home inspection I had actually done for Mr. David.
Okay.
Question, Chair.
Yes, sir.
All these other points that were cited by the committee.
Yes, it was. Actually, when I was in the first meeting, I believe Mr. Winter said, was it Winters? King, maybe Mr. King, that my report was written as what was wrong with the inspection. Well, I went back through my paperwork and I did 30 parallels and I was never shown a completed home inspection. So I actually had gleaned my personal home inspection in order to program my home inspection. So there was never any malicious intent towards Mr. David or any of the home inspections I did. I was just not aware that my home inspection was wrong. And after further review, it was one button on my program which gave it as an acceptance where it reported marginal and defective. Okay. So by hitting the button, then I could say it was acceptable at time of inspection. So, and we agreed upon that in that first meeting. That had been corrected. The other two items, the roof and the door, were justified in the courts. And I was not held responsible. So I don't know where else to go but to follow this through. Upon conversations, and I don't wish to, but I can voluntarily submit or surrender my license, which I feel is totally unjust, only because I had no idea I was doing something wrong until there was a complaint file. And I don't think that this is the place that I should be penalized or find out that my report is wrong when I'm thinking I'm given 110% and I've never filed, or I had never had a complaint other than from John David.
Understood, Mr. Bauer. And I appreciate you coming here and, being just candid with the board. From my perspective, you're responsible for understanding what's in the standards for home inspection here in Arizona.
As a result of that, because of the paperwork situation, I was provided the report checklist supplement. Well, it was from December of 2012. It was revised in 2015. And I know it may have been just a few items, but when I submitted or checked it with my report, I may have had two items that I may have missed. And again, it goes back to my report, whether it says acceptable at time of, and I did not include that.
And I
admitted that in my first meeting.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about, is the fact that you need to report on everything, not just on the defective. So,
correct.
Be that as it may, here's my view on it, and everybody else can provide their thoughts. The fact that you didn't end up paying in small claims court, and that you were, found in the right in small claims court, doesn't really carry here. I mean, the EAC believe that there was an issue with the door and the roof. And I think after looking at the report that you did report on the roof, but not to the extent that it was damaged. And you reported the door handle, but didn't say anything about it, you know, being 3 or 4 inches, having a 3 or 4 inch gap. So I'm inclined to follow what the EAC said. I understand your point about restitution, and I see on the docket where you offered to pay restitution early on and he refused.
Correct.
So again, I appreciate that. My suggestion would be, I think the restitution is right for the missed information on it, but I would be willing to reduce the board penalty to offset that. You know, so I would, if everybody's okay with it, maybe that we consider a $500 penalty from the board plus cost of investigation and keep the restitution in. So lower the board penalty from $1,000 to $500.
Does the restitution go to the homeowner?
It goes to the homeowner, yes.
I guess I have a little bit of a problem. I mean, this gentleman offered to make restitution, and it was refused. And I almost feel like the guy was just trying to get more out of him. And this gentleman's prevailed in small claims court. And so I guess I have a concern that kind of giving money back where maybe it's not necessarily due. I mean, I understand that there were issues in it, but I'm willing to go along with your suggestion, just to kind of offset it, but I don't know. Just
as can I understand, Mr. Chair, is there a distinction between restitution and the cost of the inspection? When you go into civil court for restitution, I presume you're pursuing damages, whereas we're not. The board does not have jurisdiction.
Correct.
Under damages.
Correct.
So in our particular consent agreement, we're just merely pursuing the cost of the inspection report.
That's correct. That's all we're talking about is the $250 inspection fee.
Okay, so there's no contradiction then with the court's decision on restitution.
No, because I think you're right. That was some damages. This is about the fact that there were items missed on the inspection.
And I think he's still culpable for that. He provided a report that did not comply with the SOP.
I think so.
Mr. Chair, that's a good point. But I'd like to see the term restitution maybe changed so we know it's specific to the contract, not that he's going to have to help fix something.
Restitution of inspection fees? Is that what?
Reimbursement.
Yeah, a reimbursement of inspection fees.
Okay. Yeah.
Not restitution.
Right. Plus, to go along with your comments on the administrative penalty.
I agree with that, though. It seems like he's going for more.
Statute calls it restitution.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way it's always been implied, is that it meant refund.
Right, and I think
the consent does say restitution of $250 for the cost of inspection fee.
Right.
That's fine.
Okay.
But the point is that Ed was making was that the gentleman already offered to reimburse the alleger for this, and it didn't happen. Now he's wanting to come back to this board for it, and I think that the administrative penalty, if you want to reduce it to $500, I'm okay with that, and the cost of investigation, but why should we have to give the money back to the guy?
And then
the judge ruled in his favor.
Well, what Gene said is the small claims court was different. It was more about damages, and he was asking $5,000 at
the small claims?
He actually asked
that through my insurance. When okay. they denied his claim, he then took okay. him to small claims for $3,000.
Okay.
And the second response to the initial email, he was willing to take $500.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, understood. So I think that was for damages, is my understanding as well, the small claims. And here we have, I mean, the small claims court doesn't have experts. We have an EAC that we put in charge of looking at this, and they found that those are actual issues with the inspection. So. Again, I think Mr. Bauer will be very upsetting in being here and following through on everything if there's some issues.
But isn't that what the administrative penalties for? The violations?
Well, in my mind, the homeowner is entitled to get the inspection feedback because there were issues with the inspection. He hasn't gotten anything back. He might not get damages. Sorry.
If I can question. Do we actually have, I didn't see anything in the packet, do we have anything indicating that a small claims court denied restitution in this case? Do we have any documents?
I have not seen it.
Okay. I think worrying about what the small claims court has done really isn't going to be an issue for right now until we get some kind of evidence that they did deny restitution.
And we've always tried to keep separate court cases from board cases. Right. I think just a reminder for everybody, because we act on different bases than the courts will.
Concurrent jurisdiction.
Concurrent jurisdiction. That's a legal term. Okay. Of anything. Absolutely.
Do we have it?
So we can have the ledger on the phone if you have any questions for him. He wanted to participate.
Did he want to participate?
Yeah.
We should call him then, I think.
Oh, yeah.
We only have 5 minutes, though, before our next cases, so.
Hello.
Is this John David?
Yes.
This is Kurt Winter at the AZBTR. We're here at the board meeting. Would you like to participate, sir?
Yes.
All right.
Good morning, Mr. David. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Mr. David, I'm Alejandro Angel, the chairman of the board, and we wanted to discuss with you the case of Robert Bauer. Mr.
Yes.
Bauer is here, and he's provided a brief explanation of the case and answered some technical questions we had. We wanted to hear if you had any input to the board or questions.
Really, I answered all the questions in March. Unless you have questions for me, I have none for you, to be honest with you, Sandra.
Okay. Mr. David, I guess I do have one question, which is, did you guys go to a small claims court? Mr. Bauer
yes.
said, okay. And what was the outcome of the small claims court?
They were against me and for Mr. Bauer.
Okay.
The referee didn't look at my receipts or my pictures, but he looked at Mr. Bauer's.
Okay.
You know, it was one-sided affair as far as I was concerned. But
Thank you.
That's what happened.
Yeah. I still think the home buyer has not received any compensation for a couple of issues on an inspection, and restitution is appropriate.
I spend over $1,200-$1,300 on the roof and on the door. I had it done and repaired and installed and bought the material for it. So, you know, basically I was trying to get some money from him for that. You know, if it didn't work out, it didn't work out. The money was spent, gone. And, you know, I'd be honest with you, last I was there, I didn't want to pursue it. But I guess your organization does. So, anyways, whatever happens, happens. But yeah, if I get this, you know, paid back, that's fine with me.
Thank you, Mr. David. And just for your information, yeah. the board cannot rule or award anything related to damages. The only thing we can do is restitution, and that's what we're considering at this point.
Yeah, I understand. You know, whatever happens, happens. No big deal.
Okay.
I don't want to cause this man any harm. I really don't.
Okay.
I mentioned this before.
We appreciate it.
Sorry I started the whole thing, but, you know, I didn't want to follow through with it. But anyways, that has happened, and whatever happens, happens.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. David. We're going to decide what to do at this point.
Okay. So am I to hear from you, or
you can stay on the line while the board debates what we want to do. It shouldn't take very long. I hope.
Okay.
Dr. Angel, if the Justice Court has already ruled on the issue of restitution, then what we might want to do is see if we can get a copy of any verdict in that, so we know what the Justice Court ruled on. Because if the court ruled specifically on restitution for what was paid for the report, then we may not be able to award restitution for that if it's already been denied. But if restitution was sought for something else, then restitution for the cost of the report may be appropriate. So it may, there may be an issue of what exactly the judge ordered in the underlying case.
May I say something?
Yes, sir.
I mentioned earlier that I spent $1,200, $1,300. Okay, that money is gone, I can't get it back. So, you know, I don't care what the court decided or not. My personal feeling, it was one-sided affair. I think he was more prepared than I was. You know, it was my first time in the court. But I have spent the money. I have given him some receipts. So I'm not asking any more than what I've spent. So I'm not trying to make any money on the deal. If I can get the money I spent, that's fine. If I can't, that's fine. The money is spent and gone. There's no way I can get it back. So whatever you decide, it's up to you. But the money is spent, and he knows about it, and he has some receipts.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. David. I think Mr. Donald, who's the AG representative for the board, has a copy of the small claims court decision?
Yes, and and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. David, but it looks in this as if you were asking for costs of about $210 and then monies totaling somewhere in the region of $1,250 to $1,000, I'm not quite sure where the decimal point is on here, but a number.
Yeah, that's my actual cost. That's what I spent to get the work done.
And that was
for the roof and the bedroom door and all hinges, repairs, okay. Installations, and all that.
Okay, and it looks like, could you tell me what those amounts were? Because it's tough to tell in here. It looks like it could be $12,500 to $13,000 or
No, it's about $1,200, $1,300. I think the biggest one was $700 was just for the roof. And then I had to buy paint, I had to buy 2x6s, and I had to get it painted, and then I had to buy a door, hinges, locks, I had to have that installed. So the biggest part was the roof.
Okay, and I'm showing.
I paid the man $700 just to do the roof.
And I also see, it looks like you tallied a number of about $968, and then you say you're asking for $1,500. Is that correct?
That's what I started with, yeah. I think I asked for $1,500, yes.
Mr. Donald,
I figured what, you know, it's taken me time and days to go there to make a trip to Arizona, and, I was... Like I said, I wasn't trying to make money. If I can get back what I spent, that's fine with me. If I can't, that's fine too.
Okay, thank you, Mr. David.
You're welcome, sir.
Does it seem like those are actual expenses and not the inspection fee that he's claiming? That's what I see. I mean, on the list that I have here, the 968 is on the packet, and it's all about actual damages.
Appears to be for, yeah, and then there's a... there's enough at 210 and then other estimates. It doesn't look to me like the initial fee was included in here, the cost of the inspection itself. I don't see that in here, but anything that was. Mr. David, did you ask for the cost of the inspection itself in your...
Yes, I did. I have a copy of... I texted him if he wanted to split the cost. I think if I remember right, I asked for $500 from him, and he never acknowledged. So, but I did offer. I was taking a loss, but I, like I said, the money's spent and gone. And I offered to, if you pay, I think $500 if I remember correctly. I had the text on my phone, and I never heard from him.
Okay,
Dr.
Angel. Looks from, and we may need to, it would be helpful, Melissa, if you could make a copy of this.
We certainly can, and we probably should.
Yeah, we're going to need a copy.
In the record.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to make a copy of this for the board members. It looks as if the judge, that was all asked for in the case, and the judge did specifically award zero.
Okay, and I mean, this case might be different, but is that, aren't we separate from those civil proceedings? I mean, why can't we make decisions based on what we find?
Are you asking me?
No, Mr. David, sorry, I'm asking the assistant AG, the
all right,
our AG.
Sorry, I didn't mean to
the referee.
Right. The problem is once a judge has ruled on something, we don't really have the ability to overturn that. We can absolutely, there are practice violations. In here, we got practice violations which we certainly could assign penalties to up to $2,000 per violation. But in terms of restitution, that's already been ruled on by a court.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dunham. Okay, Mr. David, so just for your information, we just found out that because the small claims court judge ruled against any restitution, we can't award restitution here at the board. We will proceed with determining the appropriate penalties for this case. Is there any...
I'd rather you just drop the whole thing, be honest with you. I asked for that before. And it was just... I didn't mean to cause this man any problems. I really did.
Understood.
And if I have to do it over again, I would ask him to do another inspection for me if he accepted. Because I'm in the process of buying another home. But, you know, that's another story. So I don't want to cause him any ill feelings.
Understood.
If I don't get nothing, I don't care. Like I said, the money's gone.
Okay, thank you, Mr. David. Does anybody at the board have any suggestions or ideas?
I move that we offer the proposed consent agreement without item 5 restitution, and if not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing.
Second. Okay. We have a motion and a second to offer the consent agreement as originally drafted, except for the removal of the restitution.
Item number 5, restitution.
Item 5, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Mr. Bauer, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate your time. Mr. David, you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Here's a quarter.
Okay, we're going to go back to item 5, the cases referred for formal hearing. We'll start with case 5A. And this is the review on the motion for rehearing consideration in the matter of Christopher DePrima, P. Civil, case number 17F, P14045, BTR, RES. This is the date, time, and place for the request for rehearing. A review filed with the board with Mr. DePrima is scheduled to be heard by the Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves for the record, starting with counsel for the state?
Good morning. Scott Donald on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Is Mr. DePrima present?
He's supposed to call on.
Okay. Let's note that Mr. DePrima is not here. Under AAC R430126, the board may grant a rehearing of the case in part or in whole, or review the decision if the moving party establishes that one or more of the grounds listed in the rule materially affected its rights during the administrative proceeding. The board has reviewed the request for rehearing and the response to the request. Each party will have 5 minutes to address the board on this matter. This is the time for legal argument. Party should not use the time to present new evidence or testimony to the board regarding the merits of the case. Clearly identify the grounds that support rehearing or review. If the moving party claims there's newly discovered material, please identify each piece of evidence and why it could not have been presented at the hearing. We'll proceed with the oral argument. With the state first, or sorry, Mr. DePrima not being here, we'll go with the state.
Thank you. And I will be brief. The petition for a hearing was very short. Mr. Prima simply stated that, if I quote, to read into the record, the entire petition was, like I said before, this is really just a big misunderstanding. Yes, I wish to appeal the decision if that is what it takes. Your point is well taken that we should be ready to show employees are bona fide. I wish to move forward to get my license reactivated instead of endless arguing. Can we just talk about continued education or peer reviews without prejudice, Chris DePrima? Mr. DePrima has failed to actually identify any of the possible bases established under statute for rehearing of this matter. And in fact, in the course of his what is being considered a petition for rehearing, he indicates that, in fact, he's trying to reactivate the license, which was voluntarily revoked for cause, as opposed to even dealing with the fact that this has to do with a denied application for a new license. Mr. Prima has failed to state any basis under which this board could grant a rehearing in this matter. The state vastly denied the petition.
Thank you. The board has heard the arguments of the parties and reviewed the pleadings filed in the matter. Board may grant rehearing, which means the whole case or a portion is reheard by the ALJ or of the board, or review, which means the board may reverse or modify its earlier decision based on the grounds established by the party requesting the review. The board can also deny the request and affirm the prior decision. Rehearing or review would then be limited only to the specified grounds, because if the motion is granted, maker of the motion must specify the grounds on which the rehearing is based. So, are there any motions?
I move to deny the request for rehearing.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll have a vote. Do we need a roll call vote for the rehearings, or can we just do... Okay. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. The rehearing request has been denied. This concludes the matter. The board decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. Parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending. Mr. Donald.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, just
yes, sir.
A question for Mr. Donald. Yeah. What can they do now? What can he do now in appealing wise?
Actually, would probably be a more appropriate question for the IA in this case.
Once the notification of today's decision goes out, he would have an opportunity to appeal to Superior Court if he so desires.
Okay. So you go. Thank you.
So I can't come back here. Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
We'll move to case 5B. This is the date, time, and place for the matter dealing with Michael Sanchez. Board case number P-17-08, non-registrant, is scheduled to be heard by the State Board of Technical Registration. Will the parties please identify themselves?
Good morning, Scott Donald on behalf of the state.
Excuse me, Mr. Donald. Is the other party present? Mr. Sanchez? Okay, Mr. Sanchez is not present. The state filed a motion for the board to deem the allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as admitted. If granted, the board will treat all allegations in the complaint and notice of hearing as true and move directly to a determination of what discipline is appropriate in light of the violations. The state will present a brief statement to the board about its request, and then the respondent can address the board. Address your remarks to the issue of whether you received the complaint notice of hearing and why you did not timely file an answer as required by the board statutes or rules. The state makes presentation.
Thank you. I filed a motion to deem in this case. We attempted to serve Mr. Sanchez and the firm Sanchez Surveying, both through certified mail and through personal service. As exhibits with the motion to deem, I included evidence both of the certified mailings and of the attempted personal service. The mailings went to an address, well, actually went to a general address and to a specific address. The one address had been used by Mr. Sanchez in earlier communications with the board. The other was an address from his website. Mr. Sanchez has failed to accept these, and when personal service was attempted, the owner of the business that is there at that location said Mr. Sanchez used to rent space from her and I guess has dropped off the radar. So I am asking at this point that the board deem the allegations as admitted in this case by Mr. Sanchez, and if the board does so deem it, then I would like to do a brief presentation for what I believe is the consequence of this case.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. No presentation from the respondent since he's not present. At this time, the board will deliberate and rule on the state's motion. We can begin with general discussion or move to motions. First motion will be to determine whether to grant the state's motions to deem the allegations admitted. Is there any discussion or motions in regards to the request to deem allegations as admitted?
Mr. Chair, I move that we grant the state's motion to deem.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The state's motion to deem allegations as admitted is granted. Is there a motion to adopt the factual allegations and the alleged violations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law? Is there a motion to adopt the allegations from the complaint and notice of hearing as findings of fact and conclusions of law?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Everett. Is there a second? Thank you. Mr. Donald, is this where you wanted to make a presentation or?
We can still have to vote on that.
Okay, after the vote? Okay. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Dr. Angel. I'll be very brief. This is a relatively egregious case of a gentleman who is a registrant in California, but not in Arizona, who came into Arizona to perform work on two different occasions. And in one case, actually stamped something, I believe, with his California registration. He also involved an Arizona registrant who he attempted to pay to stamp documents. That registrant provided him his electronic seal. And according to evidence submitted by the registrant was unaware that Mr. Sanchez went ahead and used that on the survey. The registrant was disciplined by this board already. Mr. Sanchez and Sanchez Survey, however, were not disciplined at the time. It's taken longer to move through the system with them. Mr. Sanchez has availed himself of the market in Arizona, and he has avoided becoming registered or taking any action to actually be in compliance with Arizona law. I outlined seven different allegations in here, four against Mr. Sanchez personally and three against Sanchez Survey. And I believe it is appropriate under the circumstances of the case for the board to assign the maximum penalty for each of those allegations. I would ask at this time that the board find $2,000 per allegation against Mr. Sanchez and $2,000 per allegation against the respondent department. Additionally, I would ask that the board award costs and fees incurred in prosecuting this claim.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. We will now deliberate on the appropriate discipline to be imposed. The board may consider the following actions. Letter of reprimand, non-registrant. No letter of reprimand. No probation, no peer review, okay. An administrative penalty in the amount of no more than $2,000 per violation and cost of investigations. It's really what we have available to ourselves.
Chairman Angel, if I can just clarify, it's being an unlicensed issue, it'd be a civil penalty under the applicable statute instead of the administrative penalty just referenced.
Thank you.
Kind of the same, but they are technically considered.
Makes perfect sense. So yes, a civil penalty, cost of investigations are available to us. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move that we issue the following order. A civil penalty against Mr. Sanchez in the amount of, I believe it's $8,000 for four accounts, for four violations, and then a civil penalty against Sanchez Survey in the amount of $6,000 for four violations of board statutes. Three violations of board statute. And costs of investigation and costs of prosecution of the case.
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
Are we also going to have board staff inform California?
We need to.
I think that's important.
That's going to be my next question after we vote.
Does that need to be part of the discipline, or is that can be separate just to notify California? I mean, it seems like this came about where he did work here with his California license. California told him he couldn't do that. Is that correct? Then he tried to fix it, and this is when we got in trouble by using other surveyors and doing things here that he shouldn't have done. So this is all related to his California issues. Okay, do we have, if the board can comment, what's the likelihood of collecting on this? And what's a remedy if he doesn't pay?
Well, under your statutes, it can be referred to the Attorney General's Office.
For collections? Okay. Thank you. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Do we want to give a time frame on payment?
Your statute provides 30 days.
Okay.
This is a board order.
Oh, that's right.
It's not a consent agreement.
Okay.
And do we know what the cost of investigations were? Does that need to be memorialized in the decision or just to say cost of investigation?
If it's known at this time, you can state it. If not, you can as determined.
Okay. Thank you.
Verified by staff. It can be put into a final order.
Okay. We'll leave it up to staff unless somebody knows already. Okay, we'll leave it up to staff to determine those costs. Okay, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. This concludes the proceeding. Board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served to the parties on the parties. Parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. Thank you for attending today. Okay.
Should you formally have to request that we tell California?
No.
I think we've already. Melissa, would you please notify California or the board? Or Patty?
I'm sorry. It was his fault.
You're supposed to have a talking class. Can you make sure to notify California,
yes.
Please? Just to be on the record if we want.
She's responsible, not me.
We know.
We know.
Okay. There's people here for other cases, so we'll try to address those cases. So we'll move to case 6B4. This is the case of Don Weston Jolly, RA, 30779. Investigator is Mr. Thacker. The synopsis is, in November of 17, board received a complaint alleging respondent, after being paid $2,500, failed to timely produce plans necessary for the alleger to obtain a city permit and for use in obtaining bids for placement of a modular building in 3357 East Washington Street. In September of 2017, we have the details of the investigation. We know that the investigative conclusion is that respondent engaged in gross negligence, when after being paid $2,500, failed to produce plans necessary in a timely manner, and the respondent failed to comply with the subpoena issued by the board. So we had staff recommendation of letter reprimand, state suspension and probation, $4,000 administrative penalty, cost of investigation of $655, and restitution of $2,500. So if you could please state your name for the record.
My name is Sue Reidenauer, and my brother is
Kevin Smith.
Thank you.
And Don Jolly.
And Don Jolly. And are you the alledgers? And then Mr. Jolly. Okay. Thank you. Would either one of you like to make a presentation? Maybe the alleger first?
Is that all right if I...
Absolutely. You can address the board.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just have a couple of things to say on this case on behalf of my brother, and then I think he would be more than happy to answer any questions. My brother, Kevin Smith, asked me last October to look into the situation with Don Jolly. His new architect and I separately encouraged him to file the complaint. He did that in October last year. In November, I began talking to the investigator, Sean Becker, on his behalf. I want to say at this time that it has been truly a good experience to work with the Arizona State Board of Technical Registration. Everyone in the office, and especially Mr. Thacker, have been very courteous and professional. We were never left in the dark. At times I felt that things weren't moving along, but Mr. Thacker maintained that everything was going according to the timeline, and Mr. Jolly had rights that they needed to maintain. I know the whole process took longer than necessary because Mr. Thacker couldn't get Mr. Jolly to engage. It was only after Mr. Jolly received the notice of fines and fees, I think called a consent agreement, that Mr. Jolly came around and ultimately why he is here today. I believe, as you stated, that Mr. Jolly did ignore the subpoena issued by the board. Kevin hired Mr. Jolly in July of last year to work on a building for his new lot on East Washington Street in downtown Phoenix. My brother has been in the resale automotive business in the area for over 20 years. When he hired Mr. Jolly, he asked that he draw up plans for a permanent building, which a few days later he changed to a modular building. He needed plans drawn up and to be able to get permits through the city. He also asked gave Mr. Jolly a surveyor's map that he paid to have done. He paid him $2,500. Mr. Jolly gave a timeline of 2 months to complete the work. He never told my brother that he had work ahead of him, and I don't think that even matters at this point. If he couldn't do the work, then he shouldn't have taken the job, but it's a point that Mr. Jolly makes later to my brother. Kevin gave Mr. Jolly 5 weeks to produce some kind of paperwork. He invited him to lunch, and nothing was produced. Mr. Jolly needed one more week. At 6 weeks, Kevin made another push, after which he received an email attachment from Mr. Jolly. And to his surprise, it was the surveyor's site map that he had originally given to Mr. Jolly on day one with two modifications. The first one was Mr. Jolly drew a rectangle on the site plan to represent the proposed modular building. And number two, Mr. Jolly removed the surveying company's information from the document and inserted his own information. To date, this is the only proof of any work performed by Don Jolly of a rectangle, basically. At 7 weeks, Kevin started an email exchange with Mr. Jolly. You will read in the exchange. And I don't know if you have looked
yes,
at
the... Yes, we do have the record. Thank you.
Kevin presses Mr. Jolly again to produce his work, and especially to account for the $2,500 he paid him. Mr. Jolly finally says simply that he has earned $2,000, and there is $500 remaining. When Kevin asks Mr. Jolly to return the $500 and to provide his completed work, Mr. Jolly says just one word, no. That was it. Mr. Jolly has continued to say no for the past 6 months during this investigation. He has basically told the state investigator, Sean Thacker, no, by his failure to cooperate. And he has basically told the board no by failing to comply with their subpoena. He just doesn't want to be accountable to anyone. We have waited patiently, and we're asking the board to make it clear to Mr. Jolly today that he did defraud Kevin Smith out of $2,500, that his unwillingness to cooperate with the state's investigator is unacceptable, and that he is not above the law of the state of Arizona. After the email exchange that went between Mr. Jolly and my brother, my brother did receive one package from Mr. Jolly. And inside the package are photos that Modular Solutions had provided, so not his work, and some things that could have been taken off the internet, nothing specific as to work that Mr. Jolly did. And so we'd like to thank you for your time and consideration. And if you have any questions, my brother will, you know, speak for himself.
Thank you. I would just ask him if he wants to say something for the board or just
no, I let her questions. Speak. I let her speak for me because she's obviously a lot more intelligent than I am. But, you know, in good faith, I hired Mr. Jolly. I really felt like, you know, he was referred by another, not a firm, but another like a draftsman that I got from a block company. So I kind of went through two or three different things to get his name. I'd never met him before. Originally I wanted to put a building on the site, but we called several building companies and they said, it's just going to be 9 months to a year to get plans, to get it built. So I just said, I sell commercial vans and passenger vans, that's what I do. And it's just going to take too long to do that whole transformation. But little did I know that, you know, we have nothing done in this long time. But anyway, I think in good faith I gave them the money and I think I got nothing back. I think he's had, honestly, I think that this has been me instead of him. I would have had to pay for it all that yet. But I think he's been given many, many, many opportunities to appear and to defend himself and hasn't done any of that. So, thanks for that.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the alleges, or do you want to hear from Mr. Jolly first? Mr. Jolly, do you want to address the board?
Yes, I do.
Yes, sir.
On July 6th, I received a phone call from Kevin Smith. He described the project, which I did. I watched the audio. I made a little sketch on what he wanted to do, which included a new building in a couple of bays, 3 days, on a lot for selling vans. And I met with him on July 7th. Again, we described the project, and I prepared a contract. And he told me that he had to get his money to the trust and take about 10 days. Played the information he gave me was some survey and some other things from the city. And I knew that there was going to be some more things involved, probably kind of civil engineering and things like that. I told him at the time that I had 3 projects ahead of him. And it would take about 30 days for a preliminary drawing. But I had to do these other 3 projects first. I told him that, because I always tell him that. The second meeting, he changed the design from a new building to a metal building, and changed the size, and then the number of bays changed again. So it's having him sign the contract, I had to change the contract, change the sketch of preliminary drawings I did, and had another meeting with him. This time, he says, oh, we're going to change it to a modular building. And there's a whole another layer of work to do on doing this project. And we went to the city to make sure that we could do what he wanted to do on this lot. And had another meeting with the city also. I was trying to find out, I got the drawing from the surveyor, which gave me some information, but not all of the information I needed. And I didn't just copy and paste it. I redrew it. Because an architect does a site plan also, which I did a preliminary site plan. But he didn't have a setback, so I made a call in the city. And the city, I was able to leave a message. Never received a phone call back. About 2 weeks later, I made another phone call to the city for setbacks. I never got a call back. Finally, a third time, I finally got a hold of somebody. And I said, I need a setbacks because there were a lot of different lots and different zonings on this. It was kind of rooted, and Phoenix zoning was very common. And I finally got a call back the day after he fired me because I wasn't producing it. And they told me that there's setbacks, which I knew, but there was a 2-foot, one of the lots on the corner was a residential lot, and it covered his lot by 2 feet, and it would make setbacks go from 8 feet to 20 feet. Wouldn't allow him to do what he was trying to do. attempted to tell Kevin that he couldn't do it. He would refuse to talk to me. He was beyond listening. He was becoming abusive. He was becoming vulgar in his emails. He sent me 35 emails. 11 of those had one photo in them. I returned 21 emails. I also was communicating with Mr. Gaynor with Modular Solutions on the modular building. I had 3 meetings in the city. I had 3 meetings, 3 times I went to the site. I had 3 phone calls with the surveyor trying to see if they had to do a lot joint. There was 2 lots, not just 1. And I was trying to do my due diligence before I went on to the preliminary drawings. We never got out of preliminary drawings because he never approved it. He never signed a contract. He stopped trying to work with me, and I couldn't go any further until I had all the information. I was trying to do my due diligence. I did spend a lot of time on this project. And so when he started becoming abusive, within the 30 days of what I told him I should have him, and that was his estimate, not just a firm deadline, he was becoming abusive and trying to get his money back. But I had preliminary drawings. I didn't want him to be using the preliminary drawings because they were preliminary drawings. They were not final drawings, and he was trying to say, this is all I did. Well, I was trying to do my due diligence. I wasn't just a draftsman. I'm an architect. I try to find these things out. And him saying that I didn't spend my time is not correct.
Thank you. Do you have anything that you'd like to address regarding your failure to respond to the board request and subpoenas?
I'm trying to figure that out. I prepared my response back in December. I thought I'd send it out. Apparently I didn't. Back to Sean Becker. There was a corrupted file on one part I sent, and I'm having a problem, but that's my fault. Okay.
Thank you. Does the board want to ask any questions or have any discussion for either party?
Sean, do you have anything you want to add?
What's your take? Jolly got the consent agreement, looked at it, saw it was a large fine involved, and at this point he wanted to take care of it. But until then, he was too busy to.
I guess I'm concerned in the sense that I see, you know, from the investigative file, I see a pattern of contacting Mr. Jolly and not getting a response or getting a response that he's too busy. And then, you know, it took till April to get it here. Mr. Jolly's contending that he just simply forgot to send the file, but never said he wouldn't send stuff in. What did you get a chance to speak to him, Mr. Tacker, the intervening period?
I would receive late night emails from him. So okay. I would receive an email asking if it was all right if he could send something to me via email. I would respond to that, and I wouldn't hear from him again.
Okay.
Can I say one other thing?
Yes, sir.
You know, after all this and the time that went on, 3 months, whatever it was, you know, I own property, so I had to move on. So I went and hired another architect. Well, in 2 weeks' time, and the same amount of money, he produced all the colored renditions and drawings for the site. He did a new site plan, came to the city, he did all the landscaping, fences, building, elevations, everything, in 2 weeks. And Mr. Jolly, I feel like did nothing in 2 months. And I'm not here for the money. I'm here to make sure he doesn't do this other people.
Well, fine. The architect that had all the information I did for him. I mean,
you give him nothing.
He changed the scope of work 3 times. I could not get started on this project.
Well, but if you didn't have an opportunity to work on it because you were busy with other projects, that...
No, okay. I had 3 of them ahead. I finished 2, but I had a big one that I wanted. I was trying to squeeze him in. I was putting him ahead of this other project. And I did a preliminary site plan, and every time he changed the scope of work, I did a preliminary of the building, and I changed the contract, and I did a preliminary, modified the site plan. 3 times, and I couldn't figure out, funny, when you got a modular building, okay, well that means I had to start dealing with the modular building. It's a whole different project. But I still had to receive the setbacks from the city. That was the biggest frustration because I couldn't finish. I couldn't make sure that the project that he wanted to do could happen.
So I have three things here. So you changed the scope of work, obviously. Mr. Jolly told you that
he had three ahead of you when you hired him. He did not say that?
No.
Never.
I did change the scope of work within 3 days, but it only changed it once. Never changed it to another building.
We went from a new building, new construction, about 1,000 square feet, to a metal building.
Understand.
With different dimensions, and the bays kept on changing. How many, there was sort of four, and there was two, and there was three, and then there was no bays. And then went to a modular building, and that changed the whole venue there.
How do you respond to that?
Does he have any drawings of the first things he drew up?
Phones, a sketch I did when I was talking to him on the phone. A sketch with him I did after the first meeting. A sketch of the metal building proposal. And then a sketch I did for the modular building. I had dimensions.
Were those sent to the alleger via email? Or, I mean, do we have any record that those were actually sent?
You're saying you never saw these?
No, that's our point.
Every time
Mr. Jolly is that he can come in here today and he can produce things that he could have produced last week, that he could have created last week. He never sent them, and he never accounted for his time. When asked to account for his time, he refused to account for his time. He has not sent anything today that represents his work except for that site plan that someone else created, and he put a rectangle on it and put his name on it. That is all. If he had these things, if he did any work, why hasn't he accounted for his time? Why hasn't he produced any work until this point? He has had time to do that now that he knows his wallet is on the line. He has had time to do that.
I did account for my time. I told him what I was trying to do. I told him each time when he called, I did not.
I understand the discussion. Let's focus on the issues. Mr. Jones, did you have any more questions specifically?
Just with the city, you called and left a message. They didn't call you back. You waited 2 weeks. You could have gone down to the city and gone up to the counter and asked your questions. That's what I do. So in order to get the information, don't wait. Go be proactive and go get it.
My office is in Gilbert, so it's an hour's ride and an hour set. I mean, it's a long time. A phone call makes more sense, and I thought initially you can get it. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't get information. However, I understand because for 7 years, 7 or 8 years, we architects were hardly doing any work. And people say, oh, we can abuse them, we can give our projects for half the price. Well, suddenly we're busy. And I told him I was busy. I told him I had three projects. And I said, I'll try to squeeze you in over the big one because that's going to take at least 3 weeks and I wouldn't even have any time for him.
Mr. Jolly, I think you've answered Mr. Jones' question. Mr. Jones, any more questions?
Nope.
Okay, I just want to make sure we get everybody's questions.
Yeah. Mr. Smith, did you ever sign the agreement with Mr. Jolly?
Honestly, I do not remember if I signed it out. It was laying in front of him, but I do not remember if I signed it out because we came so quickly from that original agreement to what we were going to eventually do.
I prepared three agreements, and each time I went to present them, it changed the project.
Does anybody else have questions?
They're right here.
I don't see any of the sign. There's not a sign.
There isn't a signed agreement.
I wasn't able to pull anything that was contract that was signed by both parties.
But money was paid absent a signed contract?
Correct. He paid me for a project that he never wasn't going to do that. After he paid me, he changed the scope. And when I prepared another agreement, he changed the scope again. I prepared another agreement, he changed the scope again. Each time I had the dollar amount was changing. And each time I went to present him.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the board first? See if there's any more questions from the board. Okay. Does anybody want to offer any discussion from the board?
The question I have is this a contract issue or is this a standard of practice issue? Or a little bit of
I believe it's the latter, more than a contract issue. So my take on this case is I think it's undisputable that Mr. Jolly did some work. I don't think he did what he was hired to do, and he didn't do it in the timeline that he was hired to do, so there's some professional negligence there, but But he did some work. It's not like he just pocketed $2,500 and left. What I'm most troubled by is his professional attitude and the fact that he failed to respond to anybody, the clients or us. I mean, we sent a notice on November 6th for him to provide information. It wasn't until we called him on December 2nd that he said he was too busy and wouldn't have time because of the holidays, even though a month had gone by. We sent the second notice on December 8th, failed to respond. January 2nd, we got a voicemail, said he forgot because of the holidays, will respond by January 5th. No response by January 5th. Call him again on January 11th. After 7 weeks of requests, respondent sent one signed, okay, that's a whole story. January 11th, spoke to, that's not relevant. March 2nd, we sent a subpoena to provide documents. And there was no response. There was no response to the subpoena. On March 23rd, subpoena expired. First he claimed he never got things. Never received anything from the board. Didn't realize there was something he had to respond to after all those phone calls and emails and correspondence. Will never pay the alleged his money back. And then after getting or being shown that all the notices, messages, and subpoenas, he said he admitted he screwed up and ignored the board's notice. So my question to you, Mr. Jolly, is how do we know as a board that you can be regulated to protect the public if you won't respond to anybody?
My first phone conversation with Sean was that I was frustrated because I spent so much time with Kevin Smith trying to do this project, and then he wanted all his money back. And I told him at the time, I said, I don't want to spend any more time on this guy. And I made a response. I really thought I sent it out. So I got the subpoena. I thought, well, I already took care of this. Then I finally called him up and had a discussion with him. And I apologized. My fault. I thought I was done, but apparently I screwed up. But
okay.
Just you know, I did not. I did everything I could for Kevin Smith on his part. We never got out of preliminary drawing because he changed it so much. He never approved anything. I mean, it's going from $7,200 to over $8,000, but I couldn't get an agreement.
Understood. I think we've had that discussion. If we can hear just one last thing for everybody. Otherwise, I want to keep the discussion from the board.
Sure. I just want to say that he just said that Kevin wanted only the complete $2,500 back. In the email exchange that you have, that's not what happened.
Yeah, I saw that where he asked for, you know, Mr. Jolly said he spent about $2,000 and Mr. Smith asked for $500 back.
Now, according to the contract, which he never signed, but he paid money towards, so any money paid, I mean, he can stop the project any time, but any money paid stayed with my business.
That's not what we're discussing. I guess the point was, Mr. Smith, this is... Is it relevant to what we're discussing?
Yeah, it is.
If you can keep it brief, please.
Yeah, so I am. So I just think you need to ask yourself and kind of see, get a glimpse of what I went through with him responding to you. I had nothing back from him. That's like you guys got nothing back. So that's all I got to say.
Thank you. We've heard the discussion. Mr. Jolly, thank you. I think we've heard from both. I mean, I think we agree there was some work done. The object of the contract wasn't delivered. There were some differences in payment. We understand that. Let's have discussion here at the board at this point, please.
I have a question for both of our architects. I'll start with Mr. Jones. Are you comfortable with both assessments in this case? I saw two.
And Linda Delano was the third.
Right, Resi and Delano, yeah.
We had two conflicting, so we had a third.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at.
Mr. Reese,
Mr. Marley, are you comfortable with them, or can you get somewhere from the balance of them?
You know, I am, because I think my overriding concerns are more about ignoring the board
I really, really struggle with this. I mean, boy, if I got something like that, I'd hand carry it all the way from Tucson. I would not assume that I thought I remembered that I sent something in. I think he did do work. I think we have in the record that, you know, I think the board order right now, or the consent agreement that we're that can be proposed was looking at full restitution, and maybe we look at some partial level of restitution. Work was done. There's obviously a lot of frustration on both parties' part. There's an implied agreement, I think, because they paid him money up front without having done any work. I am comfortable with the two assessments that found that there were some issues there, but I think it's the overarching concern here is non-compliance with the board subpoena.
Right, and that's my opinion too. I think the rest of it, I mean, $2,500. I mean, that's not a lot. You don't get a lot of work for $2,500, unfortunately.
You will not get a
complete. Well, but that was the first payment for it.
Yeah, right.
To be done.
But if you had 3 or 4 meetings with someone, you went to the site, you marked up drawings, you did some preliminaries, you talked to the city. I mean, that's not a lot of hours. I mean, you can run through them pretty quick. So, I think that's contract dispute and everything else. I mean, I think there's some business practice issues here, but I think my big concern is ignoring board order but subpoenas and things like that. Which could lead to problem with regulating. Other than that, the rest of it I think is all.
Mr. Madison, so let me ask the question another way, because we have two violations that were found by the EAC. One is the failure to respond to the subpoena, and the second one is gross negligence on the services. And I think what you're saying is that, for $2,500 he did what he could have done for $2,500. My question is, okay, so absolutely, it takes time to do meetings, it takes time to do research, but he had been hired to deliver a product, which he failed to do, so then the person who hired him was, forced to basically hire somebody else and pay the same $2,500 again. So he spent some time on the project, but it didn't result in anything concrete. And because he wasn't doing things in a timely manner, forced, extra cost on the alleger.
From what I understand is that the alleger basically fired him, canceled his contract. So, at that point in time, that he's not responsible to provide finished drawings or anything. I mean, I think he should have probably provided an invoice of here's my time I spent and broken it down and taken off the retainer and whatever was left, refunded it, something like that. Once again, that's a business practice thing. I think there's some business practice issues here with client contact and things like that. But, my big concern with the whole thing is the failure to regulate.
Mr. Chairman, leapfrogging off of
Can you speak up? Yes, please. Thank you.
Extending what Mr. Madison said, I agree. Professional responsibility and professional misconduct raise and loom very, very high in my mind with respect to the licensee. However, I understand he did not have a final signed purchase order contract agreement with the alleged. That's paramount. To proceed with a job without having final commercial agreements or final terms and conditions is an at-risk endeavor and subject to revision and change and possibly delay because of the vagaries with what is ultimately required. So there's a little bit of culpability on Mr. Smith's part in not having a final signed contract before work proceeds and deliverables are made, whether they're preliminary or final.
I agree. I think that's a lesson learned. And But I mean, we don't want to get into contract law, but verbal agreements are valid contracts in the state of Arizona, right, Melissa?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I like Ed's idea of, you know, a partial restitution. I mean, there's a trail of emails where Mr. Jolly documented $2,000 in expenses, and Mr. Smith asked for the $500. I think, in my mind, that's fair. Again, my biggest complaint is I'm not even sure if this is something for consent or if this is something that should be moved to hearing because of our difficulty in regulating Mr. Jolly. I'm not sort of believing the story that I thought I sent it is the end of that after there were two more phone calls from Mr. Thatcher, at least to request the information. So I'll leave it up to you guys to make the motion, what you think is appropriate. One of the architects.
I think you still have to offer a consent agreement. I mean, that's first step, so.
Do we think, based on what you were discussing about his conduct and professional integrity, do you think the administrative penalty is a fair?
We can't assess a higher penalty. No, because we have $2,000 per violation. My question is a letter of reprimand the right, you know, discipline? We can assess, you know, suspensions or probations or revocations, whatever else we think is appropriate. And, I guess if we are going to do a consent agreement, it has to be a reason for Mr. Jolly to sign it as well. So I'm okay with it from that perspective, but I think the violation of ignoring subpoenas is serious enough that it might merit more than just a letter of reprimand.
If I can say something.
Mr. Dahlia?
I can't make an excuse for not responding. I agree that was wrong.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Hopefully that's something that, you know, translate to both clients and, you know.
But I did respond to Kevin every time. And I outlined what I was doing. I outlined what I was trying to do. And we changed it. I spent more, I mean, with all this, I'd spend way more time than the money that he had. And it didn't get restored. I mean, the day after he fired me, I had the information. I could have finished the preliminary. But he refused to take it.
Okay. Yeah, we understand, Mr. Jolly. And so, just for background, you will be offered a consent agreement. You're at liberty to either sign it or decline it. You know, we can move forward with the case in either direction. So.
I think letter of reprimand is appropriate. I think the administrative penalty should really be 2,000. Because I don't see two violations. I mean, that's in my opinion. I think the failure to, I think the violation is failure to address a subpoena and mm-hmm. not being cooperative with the board, you know, investigator. The other part, the other thing would be the contract problem. And restitution to the client, $500, $0. I mean, you know, we don't have how much time was spent or a broken down invoice. We're just guessing on time and hourly rate and stuff.
Well, Mr. Jolly actually said he spent $2,000 on an email.
So,
yeah.
I mean, so that would be justifiable if that's, you know.
Yeah, it's in the packet.
Sounds like Mr. Madison is making a motion.
Sounds like it. What he just said.
Zero.
So did you make a motion?
Okay, offer consent agreement, letter reprimand, state suspension, probation, administrative penalty, and the cost of $2,000. Cost of investigation, $655. Restitution to client of $500. Not signed within 30 days.
And are you suggesting, sorry, before you finalize your motion, then that the consent be modified to only reflect the violation for failure to respond to the subpoena?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
I think I'll personally just say I think it's too light, and there was the other issue I think was present, but mm-hmm. I understand the majority. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jolly, Mr. Smith. Appreciate your time.
Does that mean the house break?
Okay, we're going to take a five-minute break. Only 5 minutes, please. We've got to keep going. Okay, we're going to call the meeting back in session. Everybody's ready? We will move forward. We still have a few people here, so we'll move with the cases where people are here to speak. We'll do case 6C1. Respondent is Larry Swanson, home inspector, number 5101. Mr. Swanson is here. On June, the board received a complaint alleging respondent failed to accurately report on the condition of an interior bedroom wall during a home inspection in Sun City, Arizona. We have the details of the investigation.
61.
And the investigative conclusions. The recommendation is a letter of reprimand, restitution of $390, administrative penalty of $500, and a cost of investigation for $600. So if you please state your name for the record, Ms. Lauren.
Larry Swanson.
Thank you.
Arizona Superior Home Inspection, LLC.
Thank you.
Morning, lawyer, board staff.
Thank you, Ms. Laura. Okay. So yeah, Mr. Swanson, is there anything you would like to say to the board?
I'm here simply to answer any questions the board may have. I went through two meetings with the appropriate enforcement committee, and things have been dealt with, and I'm here to answer any further questions if necessary.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here. Any questions for Mr. Swanson or any motions in this case? I think Mr. Swanson has already signed a consent agreement.
Chair, I recommend that we accept the respondent's signed consent agreement.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of signing the acceptance? Accepting the signed consent?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. We appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, sir. Thank you
very much. We'll go to case
services restitution.
7A for Adam Haywood. Mr. Haywood is applying for the PS exam. He's already passed the LSIT. He had three prior convictions, and he's here to talk to the board. Are you Mr. Haywood?
Yes, sir.
And we have a couple of supplemental letters in here, character references for Mr. Haywood. So, Mr. Haywood, if you'd like to address to the board and sort of state your case for being able to take the exam.
Okay, and I'd just like to say that I have made mistakes in my past, but have taken every action and opportunity available to me to move past that and kind of develop myself both personally and professionally. As far as technical abilities and knowledges and skills in my profession, I've really had a lot of advantages. I'm the son of a registered land surveyor and have had through the years many opportunities to work with many different registered land surveyors and have really taken the time to learn from them.
Okay. Thank you. And on the personal side and character side, all those issues are behind you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Does anybody at the board have any questions for Mr. Haywood?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that we approve Mr. Haywood's application to sit for the PS exam.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Mr. Haywood, congratulations and good luck.
Thank you.
And make the best of it.
All right.
Good luck in the exam.
Thank you, guys.
What kind of people do that? Maybe an engineer.
It's a student. We will next move to case 6E1. I believe there's people here for this case. This is Brett Thorne from Orion Architecture. And this is in regards to a consent agreement that the board had drafted and offered in February of 2018. Then we received a request from the attorney for reconsideration in March. And I believe today we're receiving a revised consent agreement?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you please identify yourselves for the record and
yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Spencer Proff. I'm here representing Mr. Thorne again. As we discussed in the February board meeting, we had some issues with the way the prior consent agreement was drafted in that it did not make clear what exactly was the violating conduct and make clear what Mr. Thorne is able to do moving forward in his expert witness and construction consulting business. So we put together a consent agreement making some minor changes to clarify what the conduct was that Mr. Thorne should be agreeing not to pursue in the future, as well as making clear what the limitations on his future practice were. And that's what we submitted at the end of last month. And we were hoping to ask the board to consider. Mr. Thorne, I have, you know, 9 copies of that agreement with me. If anyone would like to look at a copy, Mr. Thorne is willing to sign that today, and we can all put it tonight.
We have a copy, but thank you for the offer. Look at it.
Mr. Chairman, board, my name is John Klein. I'm here on behalf of the complainant in this matter.
Thanks, Mr. Klein. Yes, absolutely.
We'd just like to remind the board that as it considers the revised proposed consent agreement of the findings that this board and the enforcement advisory committee went through and the egregious conduct that was engaged in by Mr. Thorne, not limited to a specific incident, but spanning a number of years, and that we would ask you to take that into consideration as well. The harm to the complainant and the complainant's client has already been done, as well as harm to others as a result of Mr. Thorne's unauthorized practice of architecture here in the state of Arizona. And also the fact that following the EAC's findings in last October, the very next day, or less than 24 hours, he was out doing exactly the same conduct that was brought before the Board of Technical Registration in the first place. So with those issues in mind, we would just like to see that whatever consent agreement is executed, that it doesn't result in Mr. Thorne profited handsomely from his conduct in the past, and that consideration should be given to those as well. So,
thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions or discussion from the board?
In terms of the consent agreement, the counter proposed consent agreement, or what was
the entire case, or the counter proposed consent agreement.
So what I understand is that it's a reduction from 6 to 3. That's your consent. That's what you want to do.
Part of it, but we're willing to reconsider that. The main part is the clarification of what Mr. Thorne is allowed to do moving forward in his services as a construction consultant and expert witness.
And is there a marked up copy of the revised consent? Because I mean, I have the new one and the old one, but it's hard to compare word by word.
I understand.
That is the respondent's proposal.
Because yeah. I the one thing I noted is that it removes the conclusions of law that the firm practice was unlawful. Is that one of them?
It removes the drafting itself of the report of investigations was the practice of architecture. The board discussed and found, and I've listened to the recording several times, that Mr. Thorne would have been able to draft such a report as a registered contractor, or licensed contractor, I apologize. However, it was the using of the letterhead that said architecture and the signature block that said AIA, principal architect, that was the conduct that caused problems.
So what you're asking is that we revise the agreement to say that what he did was okay as long as he didn't sign as an architect?
That's correct.
I don't think I can go there. Because
he did sign as an architect, and that's not okay.
And the circumstances of every case are different. I don't think we can give you guidance that to do what he did is okay. I can't.
I understand the board members' concern there is indicating that every case is different, and I understand that. What this is saying is it's clarifying what the conduct was here that was at issue. And the complainant here brings up that Mr. Thorne has done this before and since, and these are all areas where he is serving as an expert witness, and we run into that issue that we had with the substantive statement number 17 that was rescinded by the board, where the board is getting involved with separations of powers issues and who is and is not qualified to serve as an expert witness. The complainant indicating that...
This one is not an expert witness case, was it?
This one alone was not.
Okay.
Because
I think, I mean, if he is an expert witness, what the court is, or what the board is saying, and correct me, Mr. Donald, if I'm wrong, is that it's up to the courts to determine who can be an expert witness or not.
Absolutely.
In this case, he's not an expert witness. He doesn't have that prerogative. Therefore, we can determine whether he acted as an architect or whether he was practicing architecture or not.
Yeah.
And what you're asking us is to tell you that he wasn't practicing architecture.
And I would like to clarify my earlier statement in that there was no active litigation at that time. It was in the pre-litigation process. He was still serving as a construction consultant. I think everyone agrees that as a construction consultant and as a licensed contractor, he could have put together the report that he did if it did not say architecture in the letterhead and was not signed principal architect. This consent agreement only makes clear what he did wrong. He admits that in this agreement, he admits that he should not have used the term architecture in the letterhead or signed it as an architect. And we just want to make clear what that violation
was. I'm comfortable with the board's original offer, consent agreement and offer.
Me too.
I think I am as well. Part of it is, Mr. Thorne, during the AC, said that if he had done this report in California, he would have had to stamp it.
Can I clarify that? That wasn't the question I was asked. The question I was asked is, do you use your stamp in California? And I said, yes. It's not in conjunction with the report. I would not use my stamp on a report like this in California.
Yeah, that's another clarification, is he had never indicated that a report of this type in California would be required to be stamped in California, only that he has stamped work in California.
It seems to me that the point's been made and they know he needed to sign this as a contractor. But in this case, he signed it as an architect, and that's the problem, and that's where he's in error.
Yeah. Well, but I think... What we're being asked to do is to say that in this case, the work he did was the work of a contractor, and that the only error was that he signed as an architect, but the work he did was as a contractor, and it's work that a contractor would typically do and not the practice of architecture.
Right, but that's not what he signed or did.
I would defer to you guys if you believe that's not the practice of architecture.
I
think we're starting to cloud the issue here. The issue is this gentleman prepared a report. It had the name of an architectural firm that was not registered to practice in Arizona. It had the name of an architect licensed in California that was not licensed to practice in Arizona. That's the issue, cut and dry. I don't think we even need to get into the weeds of whether or not it's something a contractor can do or an architect can do. If he wants to do it as an architect, then he needs to get licensed in this state. If he wants to do it as a contractor, he needs to hold a license in this state. And then if somebody has a problem with what he does then, let's let the registrar of contractors deal with that issue.
What you said actually gives me perfect clarity, Ed, because, I mean, our finding was that by doing this, he engaged in the practice of architecture, and whether that work was architectural or not, just by offering or purporting to be an architect, you're practicing architecture.
Practicing architecture.
I think that's a clear violation in my opinion.
Right.
And I would urge you to read the original consent agreement. It's not that clear that it is the use of the term architecture that was the conduct that was engaging in the practice of architecture. We'd be happy to sign an agreement that made clear that if the finding is that he practiced architecture, it was his use of the term architecture and his signature as AIA that was the conduct at issue. The original consent agreement does not do that. The present consent agreement that we have proposed does. And it doesn't say that the report he did was fine or was done as a general contractor. It makes very clear that the problem with the report was that it was signed as an architect.
Your proposed consent removes the violation for engaging in the practice of architecture.
And we'd be okay with putting that back in as long as it was clear that the conduct that was involved with that violation was the use of the term architecture and signature as an architect.
Mr. Chairman,
we
don't go back.
Yes, sir.
It's not just the fact that he signed it as an AIA, but the entire report, including photographs, it had AIA blasted all over the report. That was over 100 pages in length. So anyone looking at that report is not going to say, well, he's not acting as a contractor, he's acting as an architect. He's got his designation on every single page of that report. I think if you strip out that conduct from any consent agreement, it's essentially giving him a pass that, hey, I can engage in this activity, but you know, it becomes a semantic issue at that point. With respect to what's included in the report, but that's not the case here.
I think he's very correct. It does become a semantic issue. And what I've been advised with through legal counsel is that if we don't get the semantics correct, that I cannot review construction documents and construction for performance with those documents without being held myself wide open for more complaints. So it's the semantics that are most important to me, that someone else can't look at this consent agreement and say, hey, you consented that you're not going to review construction documents.
Well,
so that's really the gist of it.
Conversely, we can't give you a get-out-of-jail-free card for everything you do in the future. So that's a two-way street. So
with due respect, we're not asking for a get-out-of-jail-free card for anything we do in the future. All we're asking is that it be made very clear that it's the use of the term architect, AIA, wherever it is on the report, whether it's stamped on every page or whether it's in the letterhead or anywhere in the report, that is the violation that we're talking about.
So in our proposed consent agreement, I see the language. The committee also found that the respondent represented himself as an architect by using term principal architect in his report of investigations. The committee further found that the respondent firm was offering architectural services because the respondent's firm, Orion Architecture, was listed on the document produced by the respondent. That's pretty clear to me.
And that's all language that's still in there. The language in paragraph 7, however, that says the committee found that respondent's review work and preparation of report of investigations that addressed conformance to the drawing and specification prepared by the architect of record on that project constituted the practice of architecture. And that alone is not the practice of architecture. It is the fact that it was stamped AIA, Orion Architecture. That is what made it the practice of architecture.
And misleading the public. Mm-hmm.
Well, it stamped that and assigned that. So it's his agreement with the stamping.
Well, I think what they're coming down to is, you know, is this report solely the practice of architecture, or could this report have been prepared by a licensed general contractor?
Well,
what I would like to do is find a way to word this part of the consent, the findings of fact in the consent agreement.
First part of number 7.
The first part of number 7. Let's find a way to word it so that it's very clear that the formatting of the report constituted the offering of practice of architecture because that's what it did. I'm not going to read into the jurist, you know, whether or not the report could have been done by an architect, or a PE or a licensed contractor. I don't think the Enforcement Advisory Committee drilled to that level.
Well, thankfully, Mr. Donald is an excellent draftsman, so perhaps he could take a look at the document and edit as necessary.
We would appreciate that.
I mean, I'd actually be okay removing that second sentence of number 7. Because first it says, in October 2017, EAC convened to review the complaint against respondent. Then it talks about how they found that preparing the report addressed conformance practice and architecture. Then it says, you could just say the committee found that respondent represented himself as an architect by using the term principal architect and AIA, I think is important as well, in his report of investigations. Also found that it was offering architectural because of architecture on the documents. Mm-hmm. I think all of that is relevant, and I think by removing that first part, I don't think we give him a blank check. I mean, we still have jurisdiction if we believe something that he did was architecture.
If we come across another report and it's got Orion on it, and it's got
AIA, principal AIA, architect.
Yeah, he's
back here again, and or he gets licensed. So.
And he's working on that. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at the letter, but we are working on that at this time, so hopefully this will become a moot point in the very near future.
Well, I guess you would use your contractor's letterhead when you're doing work in Arizona.
Until such time that you were licensed.
Precisely, yes. That's what. As soon as this happened, I changed the name, and I've just done LLC and changed it again to get rid of the term architecture and architects. It's just... It's not something that I needed to have on there.
It's to discontinue that stuff.
So
that was isn't that the solution? And what's happened here before was the problem?
Yes.
So we know the answer. Why do we need to change this?
Well,
we need to take out that one sentence. Should be taken out.
Yep.
And to answer that question, it's because in every deposition he gives as an expert witness, this consent agreement is going to be placed in front of him. He is going to be asked to explain it. That is why the language is so important.
Well, I think if he's changing the name of the business and is committed to doing that, he's doing it in good faith. So yeah. I'm willing to go. I want to talk a little bit about the civil penalty. What violations did we... Because, I mean, right now it's implying... If it was the maximum, we're implying three violations of statute. I come up with two in my head, just off the top of my head. I come up presenting himself as an architect and lack of firm registration. So I come up with two.
Were you
going to
put back in the
Yeah.
violation that was taken out? Would that make it three?
The violation? Oh, the report part? Yeah, okay. So if you take... So that would have been the third, but we're more than likely editing that out of the consent.
Well, the violation is still there, I think, Ed, because that's just purporting yourself as an architect is the practice of architecture. Right. We're just saying that he practiced by listing his credentials, not by writing the report.
Yeah.
The other two violations lead to the third. I understand.
Okay.
Would we be wise to defer to Mr. Donald's expertise in crafting this?
Well, I think the crafting part of it, but I think we have to establish
the penalty and the violations.
Okay.
Well, staff could propose the penalty amount, and then once it's signed, then we'd have to come back and adopt it.
Approve it.
Well, we can also. I think we have an agreement that we're all on the same page. If we can remove that sentence, I mean, is that the case?
Yeah.
If that's the case, I suggest that we don't overthink it and just, have Mr. Donald remove that sentence and redraft that paragraph so it all jives together. But
I do have to ask, I think, because you never get anything unless you ask. If the original EAC advice was $1,000 per violation and for a total of $3,000, we would ask for reconsideration of that.
Can the EAC do that?
Well, they can make a recommendation.
EAC recommends, yeah.
Make a recommendation. We're not bound by that recommendation. I'm kind of inclined to go there. I think Mr. Thorne has shown cooperation, but I want to kind of defer to someone.
Tempted to go where?
To reduce the penalty.
You can reduce it to, I mean, you were thinking $4,000 anyway. You can do $4,000 to do $1,300 a piece. $1,333.33.
Wow, that's spoken like a true engineer.
That's right.
Let's update that. Yeah.
Support that.
Mr. Chair, I will move that we offer a revised consent agreement with revised language in the findings of fact, paragraph 7, as discussed, and consisting of the following order: assurance of discontinuance, a civil penalty in the amount of $4,000, three violations at $1,333 per, payment provisions to remain as stipulated in the original agreement. Cost of investigation and move to formal hearing if not signed within 30 days.
Do you want to make a note to remove that one sentence?
I did. I referenced it up in findings of fact, paragraph 7.
Okay. Is there any more discussion?
We need a second. Thank you.
Oh, there's a motion, no second.
I'll second it.
Okay, I'm going to start over. We have a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Who's? Mr. Thorne?
What's that name?
Thank you for being here, and please take care of those issues as soon as possible.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What's that?
You already said take care of
them. I think
that's good.
That's still
6B2. Okay. Yes, we got, we're going to go back through the agenda. We get 6B2. Michael Blancy. This is a case in Prescott, where the respondent is alleged to have copied structural engineering plans prepared and sealed by Richard Frost for a cabin, then submitted those plans to Yavapai County in an effort to obtain a building permit. Any discussion on 6B2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not going to be a softy this time.
Oh.
Yeah. I find this guy basically stole somebody else's documents and submitted them. The civil penalty needs to be the maximum allowed, and since it's one offense, I would suggest $2,000.
Agreed.
You step all your goodwill on it?
Based on what we've been doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's consistent with the way we've been dealing with these people who fraudulently use other... They put our registrants at risk. It's not right.
Is that the maximum we can do?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There's one. It's really one violation. I mean, we can't. I'd love to do it by sheet, but we told by council that we can't split those hairs that finely.
By lines.
Yeah.
So
the only mitigating circumstance I see here is it was stupid and inappropriate, but he seemed to not have done it on purpose. It was ignorance.
No, it was ignorance, but.
So we can't do a letter of reprimand because it's not registered.
He's not registered. We have to do the assurance of discontinuance. I would like to see the civil penalty at $2,000 and cost of investigation. So moved.
I second it.
Second.
Did I read correctly that this was caught at Yavapai County?
Kudos to Yavapai County for catching it.
But I do have a question for Yavapai County. Yavapai County advised that any plans needed to be done by a structural engineer. And is that the case? I mean, this was just a residential project. Right?
That's what Yavapai County wants. That's what Yavapai County gets.
Oh, okay.
Now, if they had said state law requires it, then we might want to send them a letter that says, but if Yavapai County, it may have been in a hilly area where they go, you know, we want a structural engineer designing this stuff, and that's smart on their part. But
that's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you make a motion?
I made a motion.
It was seconded twice.
And we had a second and a third. All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Six.
Motion carries.
B3.
6B3, Robert Walsh. Laura, stay there. Home inspector, this is at the February meeting, the board directed staff to further investigate the complaint. This was for failure to report on polyurethane piping in a home in Tucson. But then when the AAC looked at it, they found like 40-some violations or reporting deficiencies, I guess is the better word, right? After 6 years. Can't get there.
And respondent wanted to come in front of the board.
Did he?
I'm sorry?
Did the respondent want to come today?
He informed board staff that he was not going to sign, so I sent him a notice, but he did not inform that he was going to
sign. Okay. He says here on March 29th that he would like to go in front of the board.
Yeah.
Right, but I didn't know if he was going to, I thought he was going to appear. Yes.
So he said it, but he decided not to follow through. Basically.
Right. Now, that what I see is that the agreement became more harsh than it was originally, the consent? Or am I incorrect in that?
It's only $500.
Cost of investigation of 880.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think originally when this case came before you, it was for board guidance, if you recall, and the board asked us to do a little more work on it. So that's when I met with Mr. Leeds and threw the case with him.
Okay.
Got his opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Farrell. I think you're correct. But the EAC had recommended a letter of concern, is what it was. Okay. And then what I have in my notes is that we asked to be sent back to the EAC. I know, Mr. Parlin, you spoke to Mr. Leeds?
Yes.
Okay. And what I read is that he said that the violations or the deficiencies were more serious than he originally let on?
That was his opinion.
Okay. My only concern is having one person change the opinion of the whole committee.
Just another subject that might play into this that has recently going to be changed that we go here later. The committee was giving lesser weight to violations found during the course of an investigation than those contained in the complaint. With some legal advice from Mr. Donald, that's been reviewed, and an allegation is an allegation and a violation is a violation. So this investigation kind of happened during that phase.
Okay. Any discussion or questions?
I just have an observation, Mr. Chairman. This is like the second or third certified home inspector that shows multiple non-compliance with standards of professional practice. I mean, are we making it aware to the certified home inspectors that they ought to have a checklist in front of them when they sign out their report, that it has covered, you know, the condition, the extent, and all of the findings, whether it's acceptable or not acceptable, as one of our earlier witnesses seemed to get confused about. He omitted all acceptable conditions. So I'm just observing some ambiguity in how the content and the format and coverage of a home inspection report in Arizona should be prepared.
And I agree with you. And I what I don't know is, are we being too picky, or are they true issues?
Well, no,
they need to be addressed. If it's, you know,
there's a, for the home inspectors, there is a standard of practice, and it lists out exactly what you need to do. And this is the discussion we had at the home inspectors meeting, was whether the homeowner finds it or the committee finds it or whatever. It's, here is what you will do. Did you do it or did you not do it, kind of thing. So when they refer to the standards practice, which is available on the website and everything else, so, you know, I think of it as an the ROC has a book that says, here's what you're supposed to do, and, you know, if you don't do it, you get in trouble. A contractor can't just say, well, I didn't know it existed. That's really not defense, you know. And same way with this. I mean, there is a standard of practice, and it is a rule guide to help them, you know, write their reports, and it's very clear on, you need to, you know, report on, you know, type and condition of, you know, roofing, of water heater, of water system, of electrical. It's pretty, I mean, they spend a lot of time on, you know, massaging this thing to make it very understandable and very easy to follow. So just because, you know, these home inspectors don't do it, it's out there. I mean, you know, they should, and yeah, I think it's probably been addressed in newsletters and...
I just have a couple comments. I think what you may be seeing here and in the previous case is the result of what happened early on in this board's regulation of this industry, and certainly since 2013 when we merged the home inspection program with the investigations unit among the big five. So prior to that, it's my understanding that when we acquired regulation of this industry in 2000, there were any number of home inspectors who were grandfathered in and possibly had been doing this with different standards their own way for any number of years. And until 2013, when I started, the applications were not given the same scrutiny that they are today. So the newer applicants, the newer registrants, hopefully have been vetted and understand the process that Jason explained with the checklist and all the standards that have been made available to them and documents on the website and communication with board licensing staff. I think we're seeing some older, long-time licensed registrants who maybe didn't go through the same scrutiny and vetting that we now put our current licensees through.
But they know about the checklist.
It's on the website. Our staff goes and discusses at Home Inspector Association meetings. We have written any number of articles you may remember from past newsletter editions. Randy West, a former member of the committee, would always include an article about standards, and we indicate in the newsletter and on the website that standards are reviewed every year, usually at the November home inspector meeting, and the checklist and those standards are reviewed every year.
Thank you.
Okay. Back on this case, Thrower, did we have a motion?
No.
Okay. Is there a motion or additional discussion in this case?
I move that we offer the proposed consent agreement.
Thank you.
If not signed within 30 days, do whatever we do.
Second.
By that you mean
referring.
Hearing. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. 6C2, this is a signed consent agreement from Stephen Gillespie, Home Inspector 47256. Is there any desire for discussion on this item?
I move that we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. We will move to case 6D1. This is the case of Mr. Victor Fontes. Three different cases, 15034, 15072, and 17075. And this is the result of the board in February asking staff to agendize a potential injunction against the respondent due to continued practice of more regulated professions. Is there anything that Mr. Hunt or Patty, Melissa, anybody wants to bring up?
He's signed two consent agreements admitting that he's violated the first consent agreement.
It's
really solid that he's continued after numerous consent agreements.
And what do we gain by having an injunction, specifically?
Well, the benefit of having an injunction is the ability to go after penalties for breach of the injunction. The first step is to get an actual injunction, which is a bit of a process for the Superior Court. Once you have an injunction, you need to serve the guy with it. Once you've done that, if he starts breaching, then you go after him for contempt of court, and the court can order monetary fines. And if it keeps on going over a period of time, eventually the court gets tired of dealing with him, and they can actually impose jail time if they want for contempt of court. The only problem with an injunction, the downside to it, is because you're going after money or personal freedom, you actually have to accomplish service when you're serving them for breach of injunction. So that is where it gets tricky. If somebody's really laying low down the line, the court will not impose a fine or jail time unless you actually can prove that you served with it. But it gives you then flexibility to go after a superior court.
And publication doesn't work for injunctions?
Not for injunction. Not okay. For violation of it. For an injunction, yes, but not for the violation.
Gotcha.
Okay. And do you think an injunction is an appropriate course here? And Patty made the case that it is.
I think it is as well. I mean, he's completely ignoring this board's jurisdiction with an injunction. He can try to ignore Superior Court, but there's...
Has he complied with the other elements of the previous consent agreements? The penalties and the...
Yes, he has. But interesting to note is that he did sign the most recent consent agreement you offered to him, and he refused to copy that we sent to him as a verification that he received it. So he followed through with the order, so he refused that on a certified note.
Okay.
Thank you. He lives in McAllen.
Okay, what's the board's pleasure?
I move that we move forward with the injunction.
I second.
I can't second. I second.
You do second?
I'll second.
Okay. Noel seconds. Okay, all in favor of seeking an injunction?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, that's the plan. Item 6F1, approval of appointment to EAC for Anthony Crucci, Home Inspector 62736. Thank you, Mr. Hunt.
I move that we approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor of approval?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Move on by.
Thank you. All right. Licensing consent agenda. Item 2 is for review. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I move that we consent 8A, 1, and 2.
Judges.
2 doesn't need anything.
We don't need 2, but 801, cancellation of registration and certifications. Expired for you. Thank you.
Once again, it was not on the list.
We have a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, we're done there.
Who was the second?
Ed.
Mr. Morley.
No, Ed was first.
No? Mr. Jones is always first.
Okay. Don't tell it all. Ed down.
So we got policy matters and director's report to go. I do have to leave in about 20 minutes.
All right, I'll be
Melissa, can you do director's report first? Specifically,
sure.
If there's anything to discuss on legislation or GL, I'd like to be present for
okay.
that.
Okay. Well, so you all know and are on the same page, we, with thanks to Kurt and Rob, successfully migrated all our data back onto the CRM. And GL Solutions received a letter yesterday from State Procurement telling them that we no longer needed their services. And he shut the bill, shut the system, the GL system off this morning, and subsequently has been trying to figure out how we migrated our data back. He claimed to State Procurement he was worried about the security of the data we migrated back. But interestingly enough, as I indicated in the director's report, during your last board meeting, Rob and Doug were kind of surfing one of the registrants we had heard at the meeting and clicked on a link GL had just put up. And on the link, which is accessible to all the public, was confidential investigative information that should not have been placed on the link. So we immediately reported the security breach because it's pretty serious to the state as well as, you know, everyone. And it's been interesting convincing GL that it's a serious problem and breach. So regardless, our current relationship with GL is over. And we are up and running with the CRM, which is a Microsoft product, and helping us with that was a consultant group called IT Partners that we contracted with through Asset, the IT component of DOA, and they were great. We worked with a man named Anupam and the project manager, Richard Cook. Anupam, Rob, and Kurt spent hours on this to the tune of approximately $45,000 to help us migrate the data safely. And what we've ended up with is a bit better than our previous CRM, because obviously we had been using GL for 8 months. So what we have is almost like an amalgam of the old CRM and the GL system. And I can have Rob probably speak to that in greater detail.
What was the $45,000?
To pay these Anupam and the Microsoft people to re-up our CRM for us.
And help pull the data out of GL and have it...
perhaps any discussion that may or may not still be part of GL should be...
Yeah, we can discuss this greater if you need to in executive session. We have agendized a policy matter on it for specific questions. Legislation has been interesting. I don't know if you, Hattie did a last run on it yesterday. The information that I provided you in the director's report was good as of last week, but there are some bills that have passed or been vetoed since then.
Right, 1273, a person can go to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council to dispute any practice having to do with licensing or substantive policy statements, anything that didn't go through this legislature or FERC. They can go and dispute that the practice is an undue burden, and it gives FERC the authority to override the board and change that practice or that substantive policy.
What does that stand for, GR?
Governor's Regulatory Review Council. It's the entity that we send our rules packages through.
So somebody could go to this group and say, I want the practice of architecture deregulated. You guys look into
no,
it.
No, it would be more of the process of the application. What something requires part of the application. Is that your understanding?
But not the rules. They can't request that the rules be modified, just processes and...
I think they could require...
Yeah, they can, and there's already been a lot of things.
Yeah, it's just the rules, though. It's not the statutes. You couldn't fundamentally change what the board does. You'd be able to modify rules, but you couldn't deregulate architecture or something through your...
But they could ask that the rule be modified.
Yes, and what these bills that we've mentioned here and that Patty will continue to tell you about is doing is basically... the governor and the legislature couldn't consolidate us successfully. So what they're doing is using current and existing institutions and giving them more power and authority over us. So that's what this FERC rule is doing, is almost overseeing, will oversee our final decisions if they're...
But we don't have to move down to ADOA?
Not yet.
Is it still being...
No, not this year.
Okay.
So has 1273 passed?
This one passed, right, honey? It's starting with the Senate, went through the House, has gone back to the Senate with concurrence, so it will pass.
Okay.
It would be highly unlikely that it would die at this point. Senate Bill 1436 is the bill that requires the board to, or any board, to issue a license to people with criminal backgrounds unless it includes certain types of violations, and also requires the board to consider whether or not a criminal action would prohibit licensure long before a person even qualifies for licensure. So my understanding is that the AG's office will issue some guidance on what you do with that.
Yeah, that would be an agency-wide.
Can House Bill 2207, we have to keep recordings of our meetings up on our website for 3 years.
Yeah, and that has been signed by the governor, so.
And then House Bill 2238, administrative decision, changes the scope of what the Superior Court judge can do in overriding a board's decision, and I'm guessing the AG's office will address that as well.
Yeah, because it changes long-standing case precedent where Superior Court, if one of our cases went up for judicial review, the court was always required to give deference to the administrative agency's decision because you guys were always considered the experts in the given industry, which a Superior Court judge obviously is not. But now...
Right, it's a de novo review by the Superior Court, which is one of those things that I think from a legal standpoint, I can't imagine a Superior Court judge not giving some kind of deference to the opinion of the professionals who actually
have enough appeal,
so I'm not sure how in practice this would look. I don't know whether the EG's office would be preparing guidance with regards to that, but this would only impact Superior Court cases. So it would be something that would have gone through you guys and then would...
ALJ.
And then you deny the rehearing, and then it gets up to the Superior Court level. So it's going to be very rare.
If anything goes awry in that process, we still have immunity in that Superior Court?
Oh, yeah, this would not impact in any way, shape, or form your legal protection in what you're doing. And the Superior Court judge could find that you guys were wrong, but that wouldn't open you up to personal liability. As long as you're following legal advice, you're not abusing your position.
Probably.
I'm sorry, Jason, did you have a...
I was just thinking, does that present the opportunity for some expert witness to come into Superior Court and upset everything this board does?
Yes, although quite frankly, I think at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be an enormous impact on cases, simply because a de novo review, the case still has to be put on before the Superior Court. The expert opinion would still be able to be countered by whatever expert there was on this level. We would still have access to using experts. The Superior Court judge presumably would be aware of, he should be an intelligent human being who's used to hearing cases, and so I can't imagine it would be an enormous situation where Superior Court judges are going to be returning agencies left and right. It's yet to be seen how it's going to go in practice, but I don't think it's going to have an enormous...
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and I don't know about the separation of powers, how courts are going to love people by the legislature, that they have to ignore years of case precedent. So,
right. Or let alone that, that they're not going to be in one way or another influenced by the findings of the professionals who are in the frontline trenches and who actually see this in practice. So, I can't imagine that would carry weight even when you're doing a de novo review. The simple fact that you guys have reached a certain decision, I would imagine would have some kind of weight. If that comes up, I'll absolutely provide a very complete report on the process in the Superior Court.
Hmm. Melissa, what's the current climate of the deregulation of architecture, landscape architecture, with the governor?
I don't think they're trying for deregulation. I think they're trying for their own oversight, which a lot of these bills, I think, demonstrate. So... and they're getting their advice and their suggestions from people I believe are very naive when it comes to regulatory affairs. So they're not hearing from, or they're not listening to the architects or the landscape architects or whomever. They're listening to the Goldwater Institute and the Institute for Justice, who then will use these laws that they've helped suggest to sue the state and whomever else to earn money on behalf of whomever they're fighting for, is my opinion.
That'd be very little.
Okay.
Agenda.
Director's report, answer.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Any other legislative updates, Patty?
I think that is the ones that you, that are going through and that we'll need to adapt to going forward.
Anything else to report, Melissa?
I don't know if anyone wants to talk about the NCWS meeting. We could probably do that later on the agenda. I did want to let you know that because of the annual meeting being here, the NCWS has asked if we want to donate any presents to the attendees. So the board itself can't do that, but if you and your firms would like to make little gifts available, I can let them know. Just please let me know if you're interested in doing that. And I think we should make a big presence there since it's going to be in Arizona. So I hope to send enforcement staff and Rob and Kurt, if they want to go, I want to be able to send.
Jason.
And any of you who want to go, architect, attorney, anyone who...
Mr. Jones.
Who might want to attend, just let me know because we are going to have to sign up and pay for the registrations. I do believe they'll still fund three people. So for those of you from out of this county want to stay at the Princess and take part in the meeting, you're welcome to.
The presents, we're not talking about iPads or anything else in here. They just have a little goodie bag.
Yeah.
And what we talked about is maybe going to Arizona highways or other things that, you know, the state tourism office might have to give to people. It doesn't have to be anything from the board. Shouldn't be anything from the board.
Right.
If it's in August, it should be a snow cone or something.
Yeah, it should be.
He's a hot rebar weighing out the sun.
And unless anyone has questions about the statistics, which were taken off of GL before... we migrated, just let me know. Okay. And otherwise, my report's concluded.
Thank you. Do we want to do 9E and discuss financial issues for computer needs in executive session?
It's up to you.
Does anybody want to hear more about it? We probably should. We don't, but we should, I think. Yeah, I say we go. Can I ask for executive session?
Yeah.
Can we go into executive session for legal advice, please?
Second.
Do you have to leave in 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Legal advice or confidential question?
Or confidential question, you're right.
And you want to include Rob, right?
If it's Robin, absolutely, yes.
Me too.
Okay.
I have to sign something.
Can you say it's nice to have a discussion?
Yeah. All right. Okay, can we get back?
Ranger left, JFU assuming the gavel. I know, right? I don't understand why it's so hot. Okay. 9A? 9A is a result of a discussion held informally at the NCWS meeting between myself, Gene, JFU, and Alejandro. Going back to our strategic planning ideas and continuing with community outreach, those who have been on the board since 2014 know that, the board has had two separate strategic planning meetings. The first was in February of 2014. And the second was in July of 2015. And during those meetings, we did talk about, let me just tell you what we talked about, having downloaded the minutes. We had operational short-term goals as well as long-term, more idealistic goals. And the short-term goals obviously included the computer system, hiring a lobbyist, updating rules, updating policy statements, website updates, the newsletter, using national resources from the councils, and recruiting EAC members and providing training. So at the 2015 meeting, obviously we had a lot to report on. We had submitted the pitch for the disastrous GL. We had completed the CLARB model board program. We had had members of the board join NCWS and NCARB committees, which really hadn't been done in a long time except for Susan Kleiman, who did a lot with NCARB. And we expanded the EAC program to encourage those people to help with application reviews. So, and we were looking for outreach to stakeholder communities. So what happened was myself and staff would go when invited to various stakeholder meetings at the schools with ACEC and the other associations, including TINA's AIA and AIA student organization. We contacted the geology program at NAU, although they were never able to fit us in. We've gone and talked to home inspector committee, association people. We've taken part in the alarm industry, council stuff. What else am I missing, guys?
Home inspector school.
Yeah, the schools. So we've always taken advantage of every opportunity to go and talk about the board, talk about the merits of regulation and licensure. And I think it's been worthwhile. Rob just went to one while we were actually at the NCWS meeting.
I went to the ASHI meeting here in Phoenix.
Which is the surveying...
Home inspector, sorry.
God forbid. And they actually like having board member representation, board representation at these meetings, because it's important to them, which we value. So our long-term goals were obviously surviving Sunset, which occurred in 2016. We were successful at that. We ended up doing that self-audit, remember, where we looked at all of our everything we did, and we made our own recommendations to the legislature to deregulate assayers, to get rid of the meth lab program, move it to DEQ, and to deregulate the remediation specialists, and we were successful. We were not successful moving the alarm industry to DPS, although we have tried, and we were successful in presenting rules to Governor's Regulatory Review Council. So, do you want to have another strategic planning meeting? And if so, what kinds of topics do you want to discuss at this meeting? Do you want to break it out like we had previously with operational goals and then long-term goals? Or are you cool staying with our current plan and the form that it's in?
Stay with the current plan.
Current plan?
Yep.
Okay. And, I mean, at every meeting we do some amount of strategic planning in our policy discussions where we talk about individual projects and we lay out to you what our focus is, like we just did with the computer project. So, obviously, part of our strategic plan has been to move to a more functional IT platform. That will continue. And we will be continuing the outreach, and certainly Alejandro said he has more contacts at U of A, so we can go there and lecture, and we can see about ASU, and we can, you know, include the landscape architects rather than just the architects, and we can, again, approach NAU.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we should try to make our presence or, you know, our footprint known more in the professional societies that already exist at. There's no reason why, as you said, you know, I think we would be warmly welcome as a board representative at even, let's say, NSPE. I know maybe not a lot of people here are, you know, that's the light engineering lobbying organization. But, you know, all of the technical societies, you have ASHRAE, you have ASME, you have the chemists, you have so many different discipline-specific societies that already exist. I'm not creating anything. It's just a presence, making a footprint in these already existing societies. Because right now, obviously, they're influenced by other forces, not necessarily regulatory licensure forces. And I'd like to see if we could increase our influence in those organizations.
Well, I'm famous now because National Society of Professional Engineers not only interviewed me for a current publication of theirs, but I did that seminar, which was totally funky, sitting by myself in my office, just talking into my telephone for an hour, which you know I can do, but I didn't have any. I didn't have any feedback or anything but apparently 700 people had signed up for that. I wasn't the only speaker, obviously, but yeah. So I'm famous.
Well, glad to hear that.
Why don't we? It seems like you should formalize every spring semester talking to ASU, U of A, NAU, the architecture students, the engineering students about what we do.
Yeah.
It should be on the class schedule.
It should, but...
Why don't you go make it happen?
We try, but... And we have. At ASU, Ed and I have gone and talked. I've gone at least 3 times with Ben Carr. But they have their own schedule, and then the kids are studying for...
No, they have a professional practice class that they have to take, that I participate in, both universities in.
I'm going to...
So we're doing it.
Yeah, you're going to help me.
Professor Jones.
Volunteer here. Big mouth. Neil, if you need help, I'll show up for
Neil,
for my class.
Neil, how quiet I was?
I know. I should have let you talk.
Awesome.
Take note.
Dr. Jones.
I believe in Team Wildcat Country.
The PowerPoint.
I don't have to do it.
Oh, really? Well,
those
I had 52
classes,
U of
right?
A students in my office.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So
and I make a point to talk about licensing.
Yeah.
I enhanced it a little.
Well, of course you did. Made it look pretty.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would.
But
we
I think
would
it's
love
important
because
these kids have a lot of these students have a lot of questions about licensing.
And they always want to know how much more money they can make if they get licensed.
Well, the big one was good moral character. That had
timing
and
knows, everything. I've gone to the Palo Verde dinner twice where they honor their new licensees and scared everyone with good moral character and don't get arrested and,
and the discipline.
Don't
lie. 2 days
to
get out there.
Yeah.
Such a hike.
Okay.
Anyway, I just think it's important that
cool.
It becomes part of the curriculum
at
these universities.
You guys are up there in your profession, so if you have contacts,
got lots of contacts,
then let's use them and volunteer ourselves. Or you can volunteer me if you don't want to do it.
I'll be your sidekick.
You will. I knew you would.
I'll be deaf and mute, but I'll
no,
sit
you
there.
Won't.
Okay.
So
contact Rob Miller.
Something I'd like to see with the strategic planning is interaction with investigations and licensing. And I don't know what happened in 2014, but I think it's important to include the staff's input in at least those two areas, maybe more from the staff, I'm not sure. But that seems to be like the working part of this board.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's important to have them in on what we do.
You mean have them come to the meetings and
participate as a stakeholder?
Well, can I expand on that? I maybe even reciprocity. There have been some EAC meetings, which I've read case assessments that I wish I was present in, but they don't. They don't normally notify us. We're kept out of that.
I think that's intentional.
Because then you'd have to recuse yourself when you got here, because you'd have to.
Oh, then I would have tried knowledge. Okay.
Well, I'm speaking more
try.
Like, you want the licensing tech to come in and be available for licensing cases in the same way we have enforcement
staff
available?
Well, I'm looking at the two gentlemen, three gentlemen at the end of the table there, and think that they should be included in all of this. And what I'm really drawing on is seeing what happened with GL. Maybe we can...
And they happen.
We can include... right. But, I mean, if we're talking strategic planning, we can draw on their experiences and their needs for the future rather than try to guess what they need.
And so, how do you guys feel about that? I mean, we meet as a management team and talk about needs and wish lists and things like that. We talk about personnel matters. We talk about, you know, Doug had that great idea to modify the EAC functionality, and actually licensing and enforcement work pretty closely together in terms of checking to see who lied on a renewal or who lied on an application and whether investigation should be opened on our own for that. Is there something else that you want to...
No, I think maybe it's covered. I just wasn't here in 2014, but okay. I think it's important to emphasize that the things that they do are part of our strategic plan.
Are you thinking that if we have a strategic planning meeting, they should be coming to that? Is that
yes. Yes, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, precisely.
Okay. So rather than just have the managers have everybody involved, staff as well.
Yeah, sure.
Correct.
Okay.
I think it'd be great just to get an overview and understanding of, you know, what works, what doesn't. You know, our perceptions, their perceptions, and have a dialogue. I mean, it's going to be tough to agendize that, but we'll figure it out.
So you guys know, we meet pretty regularly and always are, like, in the process of redoing our internal policies and procedures, because we do learn from each case. And so, for instance, the licensing ladies and I have a meeting scheduled for Friday. I don't know if Rob knows about this, where... We were having a problem with the alarm industry where we would send them your granted and stuck to the letter would be their wallet card. And, you know, you have to now pay for your 3-year renewal. Well, why would they if they could just peel the wallet card off? And we were losing a fair amount of renewals from the alarm industry because they never paid the renewal and their card was good for 3 years. So to combat that, the ladies from licensing came and said, what do you think about sending them a letter saying, congratulations, you were granted. Here's a temporary card, which is printed on paper that says temporary across and says it's good from the day you were granted until the date your 3-year renewal was due. And so we've let that go for about 6 weeks now, and we're going to see how many people we capture as renewals. And, you know, once they pay, then we send them their actual card. So we're going to see how well that works. So we work on those sorts of things all the time. Patty has a stack of policies that have been edited and re-edited and all. But
I guess my point is a strategic plan, an overall strategic plan, is also going to include strategic plans from each working part of the board. So, I just want to make sure that that's brought up as well with everything.
What's the status of that young man that Scott took his license away that he never had? It never happened to him. Did he sign up to take his test?
That's
not on the agenda.
But still not on the agenda.
Good rebuttal.
It could certainly be on a future agenda.
It could be.
I mean, that's something in the labs. I think you talk about stuff like that. That's a pretty big deal.
We can just tell you that that's not part of a board meeting. If you have a question.
You're talking about licensing and having these staff meetings. It seems like that would be, that's a big one.
Yeah, we definitely talked about that. Yeah.
Okay, back to the item.
Sorry. I can't, it'll fall out of my head. I'll forget it.
Are we done with strategic planning? Is everybody comfortable with that, or do you have any more to add?
I don't.
Okay. Item 9B, approval to publish spring 2018 edition of the newsletter. Do we need a motion? Do we need anything, or just a general consensus?
Mr. Chair, we agreed to drop this discussion of the online
I wouldn't I'd suggest
we agreed
watching anything that we talked about in any executive sessions or private conversations or anything.
So this has been modified. If you don't like it the way it's been modified, we can certainly modify it again.
I think you should take that whole
first paragraph?
Yeah. The whole top half of page 3 out.
Okay.
Yep.
And how is our applicants going to know what to do?
The same way they've always
Same way they always know.
It's going to be on the website. They can download forms, fill them out, mail them in.
Send a check in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. On stone with their hammer and chisel.
What's next? thank you, Gene.
No, thank you.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's quite all right. No.
But you did. I did.
Yeah. Page 9, I wouldn't mind if my name was spelled, my last name was spelled correctly.
On this one?
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It was that way in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Merrily he rolls along.
Merrily.
I didn't change this. That's probably in the older newsletter.
God, look at Gene. Is your head big enough?
Yeah. Give me some proportion here. Burn.
Stephen, you look like a picture to you.
Look at Andy. Yeah, you're really happy.
Stephen Noel for governor.
Yeah.
Trained governor.
Trained governor.
Okay, any other revisions or notes, comments to the newsletter?
Will be approved as modified.
Looking for a second?
Second.
That's what I love.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Item 9C, home inspector, temporary resource for evaluation of home inspector applications, inspection reports.
This apparently was up for discussion during the home inspector committee meeting last week. And so JMAB and Andy may have something to add to this. And Patty was here. I was out sick that day and missed the committee meeting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did. I was very...
It's like with Mike Armstrong, so we'll be here. Missed that day.
Yeah, to give you the background, pretty much what I have here. We've had a problem in the past getting home inspector apps through because we didn't have enough volunteers to look at the reports. And I ended up reviewing the reports, which is not the ideal situation. Ashley asked Mr. Kavanaugh to run a bill, their clearance card bill, changing them from fingerprint cards to clearance cards, but also had language in that bill that would allow the board to have a contract employee review applications if necessary. The committee talked about it and, you know, clarified this would be highly unusual. It would only be if we really have backlogs and we can't get volunteer resources, and most likely only be through a short time of the year when home inspectors are very, very busy. They looked at what would be a reasonable fee, how would we go about doing it. We would have them sign up with one of the temporary agencies that the state contracts with, and there would be a temporary employee through that agency. They talked about the board's concern, will volunteers not want to volunteer if they know somebody's getting paid, but they talked about about making it very narrow and necessary functions during certain periods of time, going through a certain process. So there's just a bit of background there, and then there's the minutes from the home inspector meeting and the bill, and then I would really just leave it to Jason and Andy.
Yeah, the whole point of it is there's certain times of year where they get a lot of influx of applications, and there's certain times of year where all the home inspectors are busy. So if those two happen to coincide sometime, they sit around forever. The good thing is we've been getting a lot of, we've been approving EAC committers for home inspectors about one a meeting for the last 6-8 months. So they're building up that pool of more people that can help. This is just going to be, and we decided, it's a stopgap thing. It's only at the discretion of if staff sees that they're way behind, and we're falling way behind on time frame. Whoever does it has to go and hire on with a temp agency and fill out the temp agency paperwork and become a temporary employee through a temp agency. And so it's not like a volunteer can just go and just want to check. It just doesn't work that way. So, it's a good idea. Especially if we want to push applications through a little more rapidly, which I think was one of the complaints with home inspectors, how long it took to get everything approved.
Is there an action for the board today on this item?
I think, would they need to move that, or it's a bill that's already...
Yeah, I don't...
Okay.
Is your opportunity to say that you think it needs to work differently, or you have a concern with it?
Here's my concern for your edification. We have a lot more volunteers now because the committee really did step up and reach out to their community, and so we have 16, I think? Or
yeah, we have up to 17, 18 now. When I first started a year ago, actually, it was about 4 and only 3 were active, so we have 0 waiting to go out. There are some with evaluators, so back when we started, there was a backlog constantly at 20, and now there is no backlog. So
if we do have a backlog, I think to be fair and not just give it to one person who happened to be on a committee a long time ago, is we should make it available to any of the home inspectors to sign up with a temp agency, and then we choose whoever's, you know, most available. What do you guys think about that? I mean, to be fair, that's my thought.
But then I think we're going to run into the problem that we were worried about, where they'll say, well, why am I doing this for free if I can not do it, and then we get a backlog, and then I get paid to do it.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we don't run into a backlog.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like we are. It seems like we're keeping up with them really well. So I think this is just a just-in-case belt and suspenders kind of thing. So I think we just move forward the way we're doing it.
The concern is if we don't do something, a law may get passed that does it for us. We don't want to see home inspector reports not getting reviewed because we know there's a problem in the home inspector community with quality of reports.
So stay the course and then... Okay.
Just see how it goes.
All right.
Okay, anything else on the home inspector enforcement? Okay, hearing nothing, I think that concludes 9 for us. We'll move on to
9D.
Okay.
Checklist.
So
severity list.
They've been trying to help the board figure out how serious various complaints are. And the committee has authored these and revised these, and they're here for your approval. I cleared it with Scott that these are just guidelines and not something we need to publish as a substantive policy statement, right?
Absolutely. Okay.
So what do you think?
We need a lot of work on these.
I like the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
Didn't they have 10 originally?
They used to be 10, and then we went down to 5, and then the last meeting we made it down to 4. So, you know, it's basically, you know, a typographical error, and then it's, you know, if they, you know, missed calling out the description of something, but they said it was there, and then if they completely ignored something, and then the life safety and financial burden. So that way when we get these reports, you know, when we get the EAC reports, it'll say, you know, this was a 3, this was a 2, this was a 4, kind of thing. I think it'll help us out a lot. And we have a guideline, and EAC has a guideline for what to do it on. Because I guess there was a lot of confusion in the EACs of what's what. That's why they came up with this kind of guideline statement, so they can read through it, say, okay, this was a typo, it's a 1, kind of thing. So what you got out of it?
Yeah, it's intended to foster more consistency.
Yeah, and discussion.
And I was going to say, it's kind of a starting point. These are guidelines, they're not requirements. So if the EAC wants to talk about going up or down on anything, then they'll have a discussion and provide a basis for doing it.
Right. And we talked about, you know, like severe financial burden. What is severe?
Mm-hmm.
When they get in the EAC, they can have that discussion. You know, is $100 severe, is $500 severe, is $1,000 severe, what is it? Life safety, same thing. I mean, there's some things that are, you know, definitely life safety. I mean, a balcony with no railings, kind of thing, but then there's other things that might be in a gray area. But it gets them to talk about it. That's kind of the whole point of it.
And if I may add one thing, that was one thing that was discussed with the EAC was the importance of stating the basis for the findings, you know, making sure you get a clean record of how they arrived at a certain conclusion. So that way you can see that in the minutes. It's available to me in prosecution. It's available every step of the line. So they should be enunciating their basis.
Just my observation is, though, that this is only applicable to home inspection before EAC meetings. EAC meetings for all of the other disciplinary actions, whether it be architecture, engineering, survey, do not have a grading scale.
Correct.
Is there any implication that that would be good practice, or this is just something unique to home inspection?
It is never, in my opinion, a bad thing to have a tool that forces people to put on the record with clarity their thoughts on something. However, if it's something that is going to take 2 years to develop, it may be counterproductive to start down the path.
And this is specific to home inspectors because they have a standard of practice list.
Right.
So, you know, they can look at, you know, violated standard of practice one, okay, and then they look at this. Okay, is it a 1, 2, 3, or 4? They have the discussion. So, because they have a written standard of practice that they have to follow, where engineers, architects don't.
Right.
You know.
And they don't have a representative on the board, a home inspector on the board. So it's work their committee is doing as a tool for the guys.
Okay, so it will be kept unique to home inspections for EAC practices. Okay.
Is there any feedback from enforcement on this, Mr. Parlin?
No, I was at the meeting and we're going to put it into practice, and we'll keep you informed as to how it goes.
Does it look good from your end, or?
Yeah, I think it's workable, but it's just a matter of getting the EAC members tuned into it.
Okay,
great.
We're going to have a meeting next week, week from today, actually, and talking about this stuff with the home inspector EAC committee and most of them.
Yeah, they're doing a little training session for them, so.
Oh. Are you coming, Jason?
No.
They're catering.
It'll
be like free lunch.
Well, then Neil should go.
What?
There you go. Open your mouth again, Neil.
I'm going to keep my, I'm going to sew it shut.
Neil is just doing all kinds of stuff.
Okay, anything else on the severity rating guidelines?
Failure.
9D. Else. Okay, we're going to move along to.
Do we need a motion to approve that?
Said no action.
Okay. Which I thought was the previous item. Messed that up. So. I'm going to move on to item 11, board chair's report, and he's gone. So. I can probably just say Alejandro is thus and such. Move on with that.
6,000 architects.
Standing committee reports. L&R committee?
Nothing.
I can say, though, for L&R, what I'm hoping, Patty and I have been talking about a way to help the governor and the legislature. That would help us as well. And so what I'm hoping is we will be able to put together what we're calling an endorsement bill, which would basically say it would be a statute that would make it easy for those who are registered in comparable professions in other states to come here, apply, and immediately get licensed if they demonstrate they're in good standing. So it would effectively take the national councils out of the process, because if they don't have a council record, they don't, but they can prove they've been licensed in good standing in another state, apply here. And maybe we want to finesse that language, which is why I would bring it to L&R and say you have to be practicing for 5 years without discipline or something like that, and then we license them without their having to get a council record. So I'm thinking about it as a topic for Eleanor.
Or, I mean, you know, we'll always take council records, yeah. But this would be for folks who don't have a council record. Instead of having, they're working in another state, but then licensed for 5 years, they're in good standing, but they're still having to submit their certificates of experience and their transcript and all that to us, but we already know they met the requirement it wouldn't be licensed in the other state.
And I think that would cure a lot of Senator Kavanaugh's concerns, having seen that compact bill that he dropped this past session. It would accomplish easier registration for qualified candidates in Arizona.
Well, and the big thing I think that would be, would we come up with a list of states that we feel it would apply to? Because, I don't know, to get licensed in Texas, you need a face, it seems like. So, I mean, you know, it's just, I think there's certain states that have certain requirements. And
I mean, we could, if you want, we could do all the research, but from what the councils tell us, we have, like, the lowest requirements of any state already because we don't require education.
Right.
So, are there states that, like in California, you can become registered as an engineer with 6 years rather than 8 years of education and or experience? Do we want to require them or something like that?
Well, because our statute says 8, so we really couldn't accept them. We have the COEs,
but
too. So do all the states require that you have COEs?
That's something
So as chair of L&R, I would be more than happy to discuss that at our meeting, whenever we should schedule it.
I fall down that line.
Okay. We're going to move along to Home Inspectors Rules Standards Committee.
We already went through everything.
Did we cover that?
Okay.
That was covered. Board member reports on outside activities. Asbog.
There is a cool meeting coming up. I just got notice after the packet went out. Asbog's meeting is their annual meeting. Where is it? Is going to be in Monterey, California.
Sounds cool.
I know.
Steve is putting that on his calendar.
Usually
right
September.
Yeah.
Or November. Usually around Halloween or Veterans Day.
Okay, so I apparently thought I had photocopied it, but maybe not. So anyway, more to follow on that. Just keep that in mind. Asbog.
Is that it for Asbog?
Yes.
Okay, Clarb?
Annual meeting in Toronto this year in September.
Nippy.
Don't walk the streets.
Off
the sidewalk. So I'm going to run you over with a van.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Okay. Is that it for Clarb?
Yes.
NCARB?
Annual meeting this June, 28th to the 30th, something like that. I'm going, I think Neil's going.
And Patty and I, and Patty, hopefully Rob too.
Are you, do you reserve our hotel rooms for us?
No, you have to do it on the website.
I think you do it. You're going to be funded by NCARB, so you go through there.
Yeah, go sign up on the NCARB.
Have you done it yet?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
You're in Motel 6.
I think I took
by the airport.
On the airport.
I know you can't bunk with
have my airline.
So we can call the hotel. We haven't gotten, as staff, we haven't gotten anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Anything either.
Yeah.
I'll send you the link.
Okay.
I got the meeting note. I got all that.
Remind me. I'll do it before I leave.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, lots of time to kill.
Yeah,
so you haven't done your rooms either?
Also, I hosted a couple weekends ago, Saturdays ago, I hosted the WestCARB strategic planning meeting in my office, and we're making good progress.
Yeah?
I haven't seen the results yet, but from the next thing, and then we'll be
reaching out.
Who
went to your the controversial guys there?
It was the strategic planning committee members, so it was Jim Oswald, Doug from Oregon, I can't think of Doug's last name, and then we had Kathy from Alaska on GoToMeeting for the whole meeting.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is Gina still ahead of that?
Which is why we didn't get our notice.
Well, it usually comes out of national.
Hypothesis.
Yeah, it usually comes out of national, so I'm surprised you didn't get it in this report. So anyway, we're moving forward on that, and the national board is continuing to look at our letter. It comes up with just about everything I'm on the phone for. Oh, I also attended the regional directors' call-in meeting prior to the national board meeting, and didn't really have a whole lot to say.
Okay. Are you enjoying your position?
I'm not officially chair until after the annual meeting.
Ah, okay.
So the Saturday after our regional meeting, I'll be the chair. I'm still thinking I should regret that. Feeling like Neil. I'm going to open my mouth again.
Congratulations anyway.
Well, thank you. I'm not sure that anyone from Arizona has ever been chair. Gina couldn't remember anybody.
It's just because we are doing so much more outreach.
We are. That's it.
Okay, NCEES. Anybody want to elaborate on that, or should I?
Hawaii?
We went to Hawaii for our Western Zone meeting. We elected our zone officials and discussed our agenda items for the annual meeting, which is in Scottsdale in August. Anything to add to that?
Gene?
No, other than that they're continuing to make progress with CBT conversions. As you might or might not be aware, many of our Part B, we call it Part B exams, the fundamental exams, the Part A, have all been computer-based, multiple choice now for several years. They are gradually transitioning the Part B exams into computer-based format with multiple choice psychometrics, whatever, and I think the next entries are going to be chemical and nuclear. The reason why, and let's say for instance civil, or certainly structural, would be the last because of the extensive amount of reference materials that would need to be made available to the student or the test candidate. So the evolution of that is going slow in the NCES committees. But chemical and nuclear are the next in the hopper, so you shall see over the next year or two these exams going computer-based, which is really kind of keen because it breaks down that rigorous structure of having the exams April, October, or even just once a year or once every several years. Now you can almost have it freewheeling where there's a vendor who offers these exams, and you can come in and take them on a rolling basis. So, I mean, it's obviously a great revenue generator for NCES, but it's also, it's just an access and exam preparation enhancement for the candidates who want to take it. So I encourage them, and we just spoke about, you know, some of the mechanics of equivalency and difficulty and cut scores and so forth, not to bother you with any of that. But they're saying it's as rigorous as the long-hand examinations.
Well, and the meeting also had an engineer forum and a surveyor's forum and the member board executive forum. So we were well represented, and I actually kind of enjoyed the member board executive session. We talked about computer IT issues and legislation and, you know, the challenge to deregulate, you know, the deregulation and all of that. And then I know Gene and Alejandro
went to the engineering
one.
Which is what I just spoke about. And I believe you, you were at the land surveyor. Are they trying to do away with the state's specific land surveying aspect of the examination?
Not necessarily. I think there's a recognition amongst the members that a state test should probably look a certain way, and that way might be more reflective of statutes and local customs, and the national test might include a component that would reflect our two major land systems in the country, one being the colonial or indiscriminate system and the other one being the PLSS. So however this all shakes out, the discussions are being elevated to at least get some recognition on a path to go. One of those paths might be leave it alone. So we really haven't done anything, solidified anything. We're just in that open discussion phase now. So.
Okay.
Something I want to recognize is Gene got up in front of everybody and asserted his points of view on being a little more inclusive with ABET. Is that correct? That's the correct acronym?
That is correct, yes.
And I think that's awesome. The observations that you made here, Gene, at our board meetings, by you carrying them forward, I think other people are going to recognize the same thing. So
no,
thank you for doing that.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, I was able to get the ear of Pat Tammy. He's the president of NCES, and also the future president wants to, I guess, agendize the concept. And I think being in what we call observer status on ABET audits of engineering curricula throughout Arizona gives us a little bit of, again, footprint. Here we are the board, where probably one of the operational reasons why ABET exists, going back to our history in the 1920s and 30s. So I would think that our presence is an enhancement, even though we're observer, non-voting on the, you know, the ultimate outcome of the ABET review, but nevertheless influencing the decision makers. And I point out this enhancement, as we were talking about outreach earlier, we get a chance to meet with all of the Student Technical Society members. So if I'm there reviewing their mechanical engineering curricula, I will meet with the students of the ASME Society. If I'm there with the ASCE folks, I'll meet with the students of the American Civil Engineering Society. So all of this has an additional outreach component that I think benefits the board as well.
And I think that's a key word there is outreach, and that dovetails in with what we've talked about earlier with community outreach.
Yes.
So that's a good fit.
Yeah. Actually, all our guys spoke at the meeting. Jehu
and
Alejandro.
And Alejandro. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes.
How many people attended this?
Probably about 180, maybe. So, and there's still time. I keep getting solicited with if you want to be NCWS's new executive director. they're accepting applications until April 30th.
First class trial?
You'd have to take a pay cut.
Yeah, actually, probably not. That guy made a fortune, didn't he? Jerry?
He's retiring. I guess they're announcing their choice for a replacement at the end of the week.
Gene, you're retired, aren't you?
I'm retired, I know.
Come on,
you gotta move to Clemson.
Yeah, that's
move the office here.
Yeah, possibly.
There you go.
I don't know, I think we should agenda, well, no, next month will be too late, that everyone applies for that. We all submit our resumes online.
So before we leave NCES, there's two items that kind of tie in with what you had mentioned earlier, Melissa. One would be inviting any, I don't know if I'd call them keynote kind of people, but maybe some of our political representatives that we're favorable with to the event. And then the reverse of that, inviting NCES to our location here, at least so at the next meeting they can say that they visited our office.
Our teams.
We're like one of
they
three
have
left.
Offered.
They brought that up.
Yeah. They've been once before. We had a very exciting sewage system case or septic tank case that Jerry and his travelers listened to. For.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, I think at least if we invite them to the office and give them a tour, that will subdue them a little bit about how there's only one or three people left that they haven't visited.
Okay.
We can do it while they're here. I don't know if that even counts for their official visit, but
a board meeting around that
kind of.
I don't know. Do you have the meeting dates for the August?
I think it's early in August.
So it doesn't align with that.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. I'm going to move on from that if everybody is good with that. Future board meetings. I've got May 22nd, 2018.
Anybody not going to be there?
I will not be here.
Once again.
On vacation.
I'll check. I'll make my decision when I get the agenda.
Okay. Suggested topics for future meeting agendas. Anything?
Zip and shut.
I don't hear anything, so.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do need a string of new candidates for the board, right? I mean, are we actively pursuing, you know, replacements for board members? I mean, I know Jake.
It's not really our job.
It's not our job.
It's the governor. The governor has to appoint them.
Okay. That's where the holdup is. Nothing we can do about it.
I mean, you can go out and encourage people.
Well, I mean, and then we're not putting anything in the newsletter or anything. I mean, we're not saying.
No, I don't think it's auditions. I think it's more personal encouragement. If you knew somebody or thought somebody was a good candidate, you might urge them.
Okay.
But I don't think we advertise.
We don't advertise.
Yeah, solicit, I guess.
Okay.
Does anybody have anything else?
If so, just let us know. We can put it on the agenda.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Donald, as always. Doug, move Scott, Kurt, Bob. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.